and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Fire truck!
We're fighting for our lives here!
George W. Bush. Now, what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong. Wrong direction. Wrong choices. Wrong priorities. Wrong judgment for our country.
The PDB was no indication of a terrorist threat.
Yeah, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, dreamers of dreams, liberal bullies. You know who you are. It is morning. It is September 10th. It is a day of reflection. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Another beautiful morning outside in New York. We have a great show coming up today. We have Jerry Nadler on to talk about post 9/11
New York. Congressman from New York.
And today, you know, we were just all talking before we got in here. You know, we were all sitting here and it got kind of somber because, you know, I was here in New York on 9/11. I was in Queens. I was on my roof. I was, I woke up in the morning, turned on AOL, and on the homepage, one of the towers had already fallen, and I really couldn't even wrap my brain around it. I couldn't even understand. I was like, wow, is this some kind of, like, what kind of, is it's not, why would they have this kind of horrible joke on here? Why would this, and then as the reality started to, you know, just kind of crash into my head, that just sort of like, what is this? And then I turned the TV on. I was like, what? You know, I just could not even wrap my brain around what was going on.
You know, it's interesting you say wrapping your brain around it, because my head that morning was set on the fact that it was the day of the New York primaries. The mayoral primary was scheduled for September 11th, 2001.
Yes.
So I'm getting ready to come into work and do a radio show about the primary.
Yeah.
Because it's primary day, we're going to take reports from all the different precincts, where people voting, all this sort of thing. And as I'm coming down, because I always take the, at that time I took the bus into work, I'm coming down the helix to the Lincoln Tunnel, which is the tunnel that connects New Jersey to Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I look, it's a cloudless morning, and I look down toward World Trade, because it's obviously the biggest thing on the skyline.
Yeah.
And I see this huge wisp of, like, a cloud over the top of the World Trade Center.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself, gee, that looks awfully strange. And then I went back to, what am I going to do about the primary? Who am I going to call? I get into Port Authority, and suddenly I realize, I hear a news report that says that a plane had crashed into the tower. When people in Port Authority, and there, you know, people were clustered around this little TV screen, people figured it had to have been an accident. The idea that it was deliberate hadn't, I mean, it wasn't even in the realm of possibility at that point.
Wasn't my first reaction. You know, some people had that reaction immediately, like, we're under attack, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, my first reaction was like, how could this have happened? What kind of colossal mistake or accident is this? And I turned on CNN, and when I saw, and I watched the second plane, you know, it was like, what? You know, what? You know, I mean, it was like horrifying. And then I went up to the roof of my building where I can see all of, you know, of Manhattan. And that was the clearest, most beautiful day.
Yeah,
you know,
it was.
It was like, it was so clear. It was fall. It was so clear. And there wasn't a sound. I mean, there wasn't a car. There wasn't a plane. There was nothing. They had already cleared the airspace by the time I went up to the roof.
Yeah.
And it was just that pillar of smoke. All of Lower Manhattan was just this pillar of smoke. And it was just like, I just started to, you know, get horrified and scared and sad. And I kept trying to get hold of my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time, but Misha, she worked downtown. And somehow I got through. And she had just gotten off the subway, I guess, shortly after the first tower went down, because she said it was like snowing and she was freaking out and she had to walk like 30 blocks uptown, you know, and it was just devastating, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the internet just started to light up, you know, people started, you know, sending each other stuff, information started coming through, you know, panic was setting in a lot of ways. All the conspiratorial dudes like started, you know, posting stuff. I somehow got into this loop. My website, you know, I had a chatboard on my website. I wrote this like prose poem thing, you know, about my horror, and then people started writing back, and somehow or another I got into this internet loop of people that were communicating with each other all over the world and trying to figure out what happened, where it came from. And immediately, you know, I was sucked into it was that day that I became a much more political person in terms of, you know, comedically and everything else, because I was one of those people that my first reaction was, you know, our government somehow let this happen. You know, that somehow or another, I held the current administration responsible innately, you know, within days of this happening.
See, I got here that morning, and we started obviously sifting through all the news reports. We're watching the wires real closely, watching all the computers in the newsroom. And I just remember there being such a huge number of alerts, so many places where there were suspicious packages, possible bombs. First, it was the Empire State Building, which, of course, is only two blocks from here. They had shut down the Empire State Building. Then they shut down Penn Station. Then they shut down Grand Central Terminal. Then they shut down Port Authority Bus Terminal, all because of these different alerts. At one point, there was talk that there were as many as seven airplanes that were missing, in addition to the two that hit the Trade Center. There were people that were saying that there were planes all over the country and that they may be, possibly carrying bombs or possibly talking about hitting other targets. And, of course, then you hear about the Pentagon and about Pennsylvania. Yeah. And the Mark, the thing that I think stopped me and everybody that was here that day was going to one particular window in this building where you could see the towers.
Yeah.
And suddenly watching one of them just collapse on itself in this huge cone of smoke, some kind of an explosion. And of course we heard no sound because we're 40 flights up and, you know, it's sealed off so that you didn't hear anything. But to watch that go down like that and realize that there had to have been a tremendous loss of life, just had everybody on this floor standing at that window. It had to have been 30, 40 people standing at that window, and no one said a word as they watched this all unfold and take place.
I guess we'll see some of that tomorrow and probably today on TV. And I think it's important to show that footage again. I think it's important to remember and have that.
It hurts. I have to tell you, man, it's really horrible. Really. And I know I have some friends that were actually one friend who was biking down the West Side Highway, down there's a bike lane on the West Side Highway in Manhattan, where you have a clear, open view of the two towers. And she saw the bodies start to fall out of the upper floors. And she really has not been the same person since that took place.
Well, you know, I don't think any of us are the same people, really. I don't, you know, a day doesn't go by, you know, obviously because I do this for a living, but a day doesn't go by where I don't experience a tangible sense of sadness and horror about what happened. And the most poignant thing for me that day I was watching it on TV, and all of a sudden, like, the ceiling in my bathroom just sort of gave way somehow, and water started pouring down the ceiling from my bathroom. And I was like, oh, damn. You know, and I go upstairs, you know, I'm knocking on them, and, like, you know, I know there's a bunch of people in the apartment upstairs. It's they're a middle-aged couple and they two daughters. And when the daughter comes to the door, and there's a lot of people in the living room, you know, and I'm like, you know, we got, you know, the toilet's leaking. You got to do me a favor. You know, don't flush the toilet because it's coming down into my, you know, into my bathroom. Or it might be coming from the shower. So could you not use the shower till we get this fixed? And she's like, okay. And I go, do you have a number for the landlord? And she'd give me a number. And everybody looked very somber up there. And I didn't know what was going on. So she goes, I'll look for a number. And I went back down to my apartment. And the daughter came down. And she gives me the number. And she just starts crying. You know, in my apartment, because her mother was in the building, you know.
Oh, man.
And, you know, it was like, you know, I never even talked to this girl before, really. And I saw them all the time, but I never said anything. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, I don't know what to say, man. You know, I'm sorry. And, you know, I go ahead and shower, you know, if you have to.
Yeah,
you know, it was just like I felt completely awkward and saddened and horrified and, you know, but that was a horrendous moment when it comes, you know, that close to home. And I know a lot of people lost people, and certainly, you know, that's much more intense. But that's when it became human for me on that day. And then the guy downstairs who volunteered to help clear away the stuff down there, you know, and he has never quite been the same.
Been the same, yeah. You know,
he broke down with my neighbors. Like, he
really
came back one day and just lost it because of what he was seeing down there. And it all became very human in to me on, you know, within a couple of days from that.
You know, you fast forward 3 years, and we're in 2004. And when you mentioned that, you know, people's lives have changed, I noticed for the first time this morning, for the first time in a long time, coming over the George Washington Bridge, there was no security.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, ordinarily, you don't even think of that. Before September 11, 2001, I would never have thought, well, gee, you know, they got cops out on the ramp to the bridge. for the last month and a half, they've had, you know, extra security on the upper deck of the George Washington Bridge. It's noticeable even at the early hour when I cross it. This morning, absolutely nothing. And it struck me at the time, geez, this is day before September 11th, but the day before the anniversary, and it seems like they pulled all the security off the bridge. It was a very strange feeling. Well, obviously, you get over the bridge, you get to work, it's no big deal, but it's just another way that September 11th changed how people look at things, how people think about it.
When I get on a plane, you know,
I can imagine, yeah.
I get on a lot of planes, but I still I'm tweaked out.
You know? I don't. I think I've only been on one plane since September 11th.
Well, to bring it back, you know, now that it's 3 years passed, it's coming up on the third anniversary, and, you know, New York City has received $20 billion. That's almost $5 billion of which was in the form of a tax breaks that weren't used or set to expire. This is in reaction to 9/11. Wyoming will get more than $38 per person in Homeland Security funding. New York will get $5.47 per person. In 2003, New York was one of seven cities receiving extra funds through the Urban Area Security Initiative, which gives money to cities at the top of Al-Qaeda's target list. Now, in 2003, New York received one quarter of the funds. The Bush administration, Congress increased the number of cities and high-risk areas on the list to 80. New York now gets less than 7% of the money. Less than 7%. New York City ranks 45th out of 54 states and territories in per capita funding on bioterrorism preparedness. We are the city that was hit. You know, and we have more of these, you know, these facts, these information. And Jerry Nadler is going to talk to us. He's the congressman who represented the district that was the World
Trade
Center.
Still does, actually up for re-election this year.
And certainly we're going to look into, you know, post 9/11, what's coming into New York, you know, and also some specifics about that day, about the, you know, the reports on air quality, the funding, this is hard to talk about. We'll be back on Air America Radio in just a second.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Are Americans better off than we were 4 years ago? In a new national poll conducted by Mother Jones Magazine, a strong majority of registered voters from across the country claim that the United States has gotten pretty seriously off on the wrong track. And half of those surveyed voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 presidential election. Take the poll yourself and view the complete results at motherjones.com. Also at motherjones.com, your daily mojo. Every day, the editors of Mother Jones scour the web for the day's most important stories and post them for you online. Mother Jones, strange name for a magazine, but take a look. See what you think.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions.
Bring in the convertible, Bob. Great idea.
The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather. Sirius 150 to 159.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
The author of a new book called Where Have I Gone Right? The Right Mountain Guide to Getting the Job and Life You Want is Jim Hayhurst.
There are fewer and fewer organizations that are using the printed ad, and one of the major reasons is that they typically get so many applications in that they can't manage them, and unfortunately, as a result of discarding some of them, they usually get people phoning up or getting in touch with them and saying, you discriminated against me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a litigious society, and people said a good way to make some money is to say, you discriminated against me, didn't give me a chance at this job, and therefore I'm going to sue you. So people are using those printed want ads less and less and less. Typically, I think they're probably most useful if you're looking for a trade in a local area or a job in a local area. If you're trying to change your career or move to another area geographically, it doesn't work at all that way. Mm-hmm.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius. The Consultant Pharmacist is your own personal health care consultant. You'll find them in nursing homes, other long-term care settings, and in your community. Anywhere there's a need for high-level medication management. But Consultant Pharmacy is more than just managing medications. It's about helping people live better and longer lives. This message brought to you by the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists.
Past the hour. Mark Riley is here.
Good morning.
I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Thank God Ramon came by. I need a little lightening up. The dude looks like he's high, though.
Corey,
he looks like he's been up for days.
How's his girlfriend?
There was someone else with him. There was two guys with him there. But here's the president's schedule for today. Fresh from Ramon, downloaded from the Presidential Palm Pilot. 8 o'clock a.m., wake up, stay on message, the old message. Quote, job losses are Clinton's fault. Why do you think he had to have heart surgery? End quote. 9:30 a.m., prepare for bus tour of West Virginia and Ohio. Note, I'm on a bus going to West Virginia. If I'd known it would lead to this, I would have never invaded Iraq. 10:45 a.m., rally in Huntington, West Virginia. Tell them how much you've always admired miners, hardworking blue-collar heroes like Bashful, Doc, Sneezy, Dopey, Sleepy, Happy, and, of course, Grumpy. 1:30 p.m., ask President Bush event in Portsmouth, Ohio. Have Rowe plant someone in the audience to ask, would you mind if we change the Constitution so you can be president forever? 4:30 p.m. rally in Chillicothe?
Yes.
Ohio. Note, I've been in Ohio so much we're beyond words at this stage. Just smile, wave, and say, whatever I said last week goes double. 6 p.m. call Cheney in Wisconsin. Tell him to back off on saying, if you elect Kerry, you'll be attacked by terrorists. Soften it to, if you elect Kerry, you'll get herpes. 8 p.m., listen to weather. Another hurricane in Florida. It's all working out just the way we planned. 8:15 p.m., call Nader. Tell him we may not even need him in Florida. Thank you, Ivan. 11 p.m., bedtime. Take a long shower. Must remove stink of regular people. There you go. On the phone with us now, Congressman from the 8th District, is that how you would say that? Democratic?
His
district includes Lower Manhattan, where the World Trade Center used to stand. He's been called the Ground Zero Congressman for his work to restore Lower Manhattan following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Good morning, Jerry Nadler.
Good morning.
Good morning, Congressman.
So, New York City received $20 billion in federal aid after 9/11. How much money, you know, how much should the federal government have given to New York City to adequately help?
New York was awarded $20 billion, hasn't actually received all of it.
Uh-huh.
According to a Government Accounting Office report, GAO report, the loss suffered by New York as a direct result of 9/11 was $80 billion. That's the federal estimate. The New York City Partnership and the Controller estimated the loss from $80 to $120 billion. 40 of that was covered by insurance, and the federal government has allocated $20 billion. That still leaves a loss of $20 to $60 billion in addition that New York City has to come up with.
Where do they get off, Congressman? Where do they get off on doing this?
Well, the President and Congress have not fulfilled their pledge. Remember that the President pledged $20 billion and Congress pledged $20 billion as a down payment and said that would be a floor, not a ceiling. But they have treated it as a ceiling. And we've had to beg and borrow and really cajole to get even that money. And even of that $20 billion, $15 billion has been received and spent, but $3 billion is in the form of bonds for businesses which have not really been usable at all.
Mm-hmm.
Private tax breaks for businesses
huh.
that have not been usable. And some of us, myself, Charlie Rangel, others, and Hillary Clinton said it, and Chuck for that matter, and Chuck Schumer said at the time that we thought that those tax breaks were in unusable form. We tried to get it in broader form, but the Republicans, mostly Mr. Thomas, has the Ways and Means Committee, said they're going to leave it. So we took it, and as it turned out, they've been unusable, and we're trying to convert them into a different usable form, into cash for mass, for restoring some mass transit to Lower Manhattan and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, we spoke to Mayor Bloomberg last week, and he seemed to be relatively satisfied, certainly with the role that the president has played in trying to get the needed dollars to New York City. He was somewhat critical of Congress. Has Mayor Bloomberg, in your judgment, been aggressive enough in lobbying for New York's fair share of both Homeland Security money and monies to make up for monies lost during after the terrorist attacks?
Well, I think the only fair has been aggressive, or his office in Washington has been aggressive in trying to get money and lobbying, yes. On the other hand, if you're trying to get money out of Washington, you have to be willing to apply political pressure. That is to say, thank people who help you and criticize people who don't. And he has been absolutely unwilling to criticize the president or the Republicans, especially the president, in any way. And keeps getting slapped by the president and very often by the Republicans in Congress, and he's been very reluctant to say, hey, they're not being fair with us. The one exception to that is that he has been willing to be critical of the Congress, though not of the president, on unfair treatment with respect to Homeland Security funds.
Well, let's get up to date in terms of, like, is New York safer? Is any of the federal money, you know, actually, is Homeland Security, you know, doing anything in the city? Is it or all still on the onus of the city itself?
Well, no. New York has gotten Homeland Security money, but, of course, it hasn't gotten nearly enough compared to what it has had to spend, and it has not gotten nearly a fair share because... any rational system of allocating Homeland Security funds would allocate it on the basis of where the threat is. We'd say, okay, if we have $1 billion, let's say, I'm just making up that figure at the moment, where are the high-risk threats? Well, the high-risk threats are obviously, number one, New York, number two, Washington, and maybe a couple of other major cities, but Los Angeles, Chicago, I mean, that's where Al-Qaeda is. That's where all our intelligence people say the targets are. I mean, maybe there's some weird terrorist out there who really wants to burn some wheat field in Kansas, but I doubt it. Instead, what the Congress has done and the President has gone along with it has been to say that, okay, we're going to give a basic amount of 0.75% of the total allocation to each of the 50 states. That means that 37.5% of the money goes automatically to North Dakota, to Wisconsin, et cetera.
All right.
The rest of the money is split up discretionarily.
All right, we got to take a break, Congressman. Now we'll be back with you in a second. We'll try and get that line fixed. Riley, I guess we'll talk to him about what we need.
So. Yeah, and we'll also talk about the environment with Congressman Jerry Nadler. Your phone calls are coming up on September 11th, plus the liberal agenda, all for you here on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Larry Meisterich. I'm a filmmaker and a citizen, not a politician. I believe passionately in the freedom of expression, an idea that is increasingly threatened by today's administration. Films play an important role in bringing social issues to the public. Yet fewer films receive distribution today, especially those expressing an alternative point of view. Seven conglomerates now control which films you get to see. Film Movement and Air America Radio are trying to change all that. Subscribe to Film Movement at AirAmericaRadio.com and receive a new, first-run film to own on DVD each month. Award-winning films with strong social messages. Important films such as Falling Angels with Miranda Richardson about the American family in the 1960s and The Party's Over about the state of democracy in America. These films are exclusively available through Film Movement. We thank you for your support in our mission to bring alternative voices in film to America. Please visit AirAmericaRadio.com and help make a difference.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gelman. John Kerry continues to hit the campaign trail hard in the bid for the undecided voters in the presidential contest. Kerry slammed President Bush yesterday in an Iowa campaign stop, charging the administration has done nothing to ease the burden of health care. Kerry cited how prices have soared in the last 4 years, with many Americans without health insurance. Vice President Dick Cheney thinks the nation is not getting the full picture on the status of the economy. Cheney, in a campaign stop yesterday, said despite the high unemployment rate, many Americans are raking in big bucks on eBay. He also sought to clear up the controversy over suggesting a vote for Kerry Edwards would leave the country vulnerable for another terrorist attack. Cheney now says he meant whoever is elected president has to anticipate more attacks. And the evacuation has begun again in Florida Keys, where scores of residents have been forced to leave in anticipation of Hurricane Ivan. Wayne Gelman, Air America Radio News.
There he is. Wouldn't it be great if you found a radio show that talked about which beer was more likely to give you a hangover? Or which new action movie was actually a chick flick in disguise? Wouldn't it be great to know that you're not the world's most gaseous man, despite what your ball and chain tells you? And ladies, wouldn't it be great to spend a little time listening in on what your guy likes to talk about when he's out with his buddies?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Mike Church, and welcome to my world.
Mike Church, weekdays 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Sirius Talk Central 148.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Will Ferrell's the glue holding Anchorman together. But for tips on risky driving conditions, stick with this weatherman. When we come back, I've got some advice that's all wet. I mean that in a good way. Hi, this is Bobby Ligas. Your body relies on antioxidants to stay healthy. So does your vehicle. Oxidation in fuel and oil creates deposits. That means clogged injectors and sludge in your engine, causing costly breakdowns. Your service shop can reverse oxidation in your vehicle by adding BG's MI 3000 Plus and MOA at your next oil change. Ask your shop about BG products or go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Don't let a soggy 5-day forecast rain on your parade. Here are three ways to ride out, drive in, the storm. First, stop. If it's raining cats and dogs, pull over to a safe place or duck in somewhere for coffee. Better to arrive late than, Second, look. Drive with your low beams on. Be aware that headlamp light can become visual backscatter, so keep your eyes peeled. And last, listen. The pitter-patter of raindrops can muffle important sounds like horns and emergency sirens. Turn down radios and turn up your built-in sonar. Signing off, I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
We're fighting for our lives here.
33 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning. This
is the morning's edition on Air America Radio. Mayor Mike Bloomberg wrote a 19-page report about how underfunded the city is when it comes to terrorism preparedness. He included the NYPD lacks $40 million for counterterrorism training. Four critical NYPD facilities used for command and control in the event of an attack are underfunded by $48 million. The fire department has $277 million worth of urgent needs. There are 5,879 fewer NYPD cops than in 2000 because Bush cut nearly 90% of the funding for Bill Clinton's cops program. Now, Congressman Nadler, is all this true, and how does that make you feel?
Well, it's clearly true, and the administration has not taken Homeland Security seriously in the sense of how much it is spending on basic needs. For instance, we haven't really hardened our chemical and nuclear facilities against attack and a lot of other things. But second of all, it's not distributing the money in any intelligent way. It's distributing the money in a pork barrel way where every state gets a certain amount of money no matter what. In fact, that there was because of that, there was a special fund set up for high-risk areas, and originally that was allocated last fiscal year for seven cities, New York being one of them. And then Homeland Security Secretary Ridge suddenly decided there were 50 high-risk cities. So New York, the second year of the program this year, is getting much, much less. And it's simply not funding what we need. And therefore, New York is spending a heck of a lot more money. We're not spending money on things we ought to be spending on to protect ourselves. We're spending a hell of a lot more than we can afford and that we're getting back.
What about securing the city for the Republican National Convention? How much did New York have to throw for that?
I don't remember the exact figure, but that cost a couple hundred million dollars.
On our tab, though, they didn't pay for it.
No, they paid some of it, but we paid a lot of it.
I think the total was something like $309 million altogether.
That sounds right. Now, in addition to all that, New York has been seriously hit by cuts made by the Bush administration in things like public housing, child care, fighting HIV and AIDS. We're, of course, New York is the capital in the country of HIV and AIDS, and we've been seriously hurt by cuts back in that. And these cuts are especially infuriating when you consider that New Yorkers pay, just in 2002, the last year which we have full figures, paid $66 billion in federal taxes to Washington, and yet got back in total federal aid of all sorts only 50 $5 billion. So, in effect, we have a balance of payments deficit with Washington of $11 billion.
And this guy has the nerve to come here and campaign on his fraudulent success in the war on terror to our city? Doesn't that just piss you off?
Well, it infuriates me, especially infuriates me, not just that he's underfunding New York, but the success of the war on terrorism. Number one, every index we know is that there are a heck of a lot more Islamic terrorists out there now than there were 3 years
exactly.
ago. The war in Iraq has been a recruiting bonanza. It's set up a petri dish for culturing more terrorists. We know that we're not spending anything, basically, or very little compared to what we're inspecting. 2% of the shipping containers that come into this country every year. 6 million shipping containers a year come into this country, any one of which could have an atomic bomb, a radiological bomb, or a chemical or biological weapon. We inspect 2%.
Unbelievable.
We ought to inspect 100% if we're serious about the war against the Islamic terrorists. We ought to be buying. We have an agreement with the Russians to buy all the excess weapons-grade nuclear material, excess taken off of dismantled nuclear weapons by the former Soviet Union. All of that is lying around the Soviet Union, not properly guarded. They're just ready for smuggling to Al-Qaeda or sale on the black market to Al-Qaeda to make nuclear weapons to target us against. We have an agreement with them to buy it over a 30-year period. 30 years, we're going to buy it all immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get the heck out of there.
Yeah.
Senator Kerry is proposed to buy it over a 4-year period.
That's good.
The president thinks we're going to do it over 30 years. In fact, the president has tried to zero out the program.
Incredible.
The president has tried to eliminate this altogether. He's just inviting.
Is that because he's
inviting a nuclear attack on the United States.
Is that because he's so pro-free market, Congressman Nadler?
I don't know why it is, frankly. There is no logical reason, no logical explanation. I mean, 2 days after 9/11, when the New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey delegations met with the president, I personally asked him about this. I said that there was a report in the front page of the New York Times 3 weeks earlier, 3 weeks before 9/11, saying that that his administration wanted to eliminate what's called the Threat Reduction Initiative of the Nunn-Lugar program, which is to buy the excess weapons-grade nuclear material from the former Soviet Union. And I said, if this is true, I hope you won't do it. And I got back what I would characterize as a nonsense response, saying that, well, the program worked under President Yeltsin. It doesn't work under President Putin.
Huh.
That's nonsense.
Yeah.
But the fact is, if we don't buy this back fast, if we don't get a hold of the weapons-grade material, not only in the former Soviet Union, but around the world, there is going to be a nuclear explosion in an American city within 10 years. Flat out predict that. I just read this book, Nuclear Terrorism, by Graham Allison, the head of the Harvard program, that just predicts that flat out. And it's just crazy that we're not protecting ourselves.
Yeah.
Congressman, real quick question. Air quality. You obviously represent the area around Ground Zero. A lot of people have complained about the air quality. And, in fact, there was an EPA Inspector General's report that says that the White House Council on Environmental Quality influenced the information that EPA communicated to the public about the air quality.
Instructed them to lie is a better way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I issued a white paper on this, my office, in March and in April of 2002. The EPA Inspector General's report, which essentially echoed what I had found, came out in August of 2003. The Sierra Club came out with a very well-documented report about a month ago. And it is very clear, several things. Number one, the EPA, starting 2 days after 9/11, lied and the only thing the Inspector General found out that we hadn't said in our report was that this was at the direct instruction of the White House. But before there was any data to justify this, they said to the people of New York that the air was safe to breathe, go back to work, go back to your homes. After there was ample data to say that the air was quite toxic and was not safe to breathe, they kept saying this anyway, and they have been lying to this day. And Mayor Giuliani's city department of health told people, and this on their website, and this was echoed by the EPA, if you see World Trade Center dust, which we know contains asbestos in many cases, clean it up with a, in your apartment, clean it up with a wet rag and a wet mop. This is illegal advice because it's against the law for anybody who's not certified and licensed to sort of clean up asbestos-bearing material, also unsafe. And you also have to wear protective equipment. They said nothing about that.
Wow.
And they have refused. They have refused to this day to do the kind of inspections and cleanup that the Inspector General's report says is mandatory. So I will guarantee you that there are thousands of people working in improperly cleaned up environments and therefore still contaminated environments, living in such environments and being slowly poisoned. And we are going to see the results of this 15 and 20 years from now in many cases of lung cancer, asbestosis, silicosis, you name it.
Yeah.
Now, this is in addition to the fact that an absolute majority of the first responders have come down with lung diseases already.
Unbelievable. Very disturbing stuff. Thanks for sharing that with us, Congressman Adler.
I appreciate it, Congressman.
You're quite welcome.
Take care. Unbelievable. Again, the Bush administration more concerned with profit than people's lives. Call us 866-303-2270 if you want to share some of your reflections about that horrendous day 3 years ago. It's 42 past the hour. We'll talk to you in a minute on Air America Radio.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions.
Bring in the convertible, Bob. Great idea.
The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather, Sirius 150 to 159.
How is your child's self-esteem? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. A healthy self-esteem doesn't mean self-centeredness or conceit. It simply means that a child has a positive view of himself, and much of a child's self-esteem comes from the home. Clinical psychologist Dr. Michael Sheehan suggests several guidelines for parents to promote self-esteem in their children. First, be sure to give your child time, attention, and unconditional love. Use fair and reasonable consequences to change problem behavior. And be sure to reward your children when you see them doing good things. For more tips on self-esteem, visit FamilyMinute.net. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. If you'd like to get today's Family Minute offer, visit our website, FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or give us a call at 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
The average parent thinks they're prepared for a medical emergency. They know if their child has allergies or how to call 911. But the average parent doesn't know how to treat severe burns or what to do when a child stops breathing. You can't always prevent emergencies, but you can be better prepared. Call 1-888-ASK-HRSA for more information. That's toll-free, 1-888-ASK-HRSA. Brought to you by the Emergency Medical Services for Children.
It's on.
Pure entertainment from coast to coast. Sirius.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kid's principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Well, what if someone, say, a friend or classmate, pressures me to drink?
What if a friend who drives me to a party ends up drunk?
Well, what if I get drunk and I can't get home?
Work with your friends and your parents to come up with answers to these and other questions so you're ready to do the right thing when it comes to alcohol.
Allergies. Stop allergies that hurt.
Five past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio, reflecting on 9/11. Bush ignored pre-9/11 warnings. These are facts. They ignored warnings from an FBI agent in Phoenix on July 10, 2001 about suspicious Arab pilots with ties to Al-Qaeda who were training in a local flight school. He ignored warnings from the CIA on August 6, 2001 that Al-Qaeda planned to hijack U.S. planes, and that PDB, of course, titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S.
The PDB was no indication of a terrorist threat.
Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S.
Must have been a different PDB.
Yeah. They ignored warnings from Jordanian intelligence in the summer that a major attack was planned inside the U.S. using airplanes. They ignored warnings from Israeli intelligence in August that large-scale terrorist attacks on highly visible targets on the American mainland were imminent. They ignored warnings from Russian intelligence in August that at least 25 terrorists were trained in Afghanistan and Pakistan to attack U.S. targets with future plans to attack financial, nuclear, and space facilities. 3 weeks before 9/11, Osama bin Laden sent a release to Al-Quds, Al-Arabi, an Arabic-English language paper in London, warning that he, quote, would soon attack American interests, an unprecedented attack, a very big one.
The PDB was no indication of a terrorist threat.
And as Congressman Nadler was saying, I've got the quotes here from the EPA. Quote, our tests show that it is safe for New Yorkers to go back to work in New York's financial district. End quote. Statement added to a 2001 press release from EPA after White House instructions. That was the 23rd of September. Now, we were here, you know, I was here through the whole thing, and we started, you know, doing comedy a couple of weeks, you know, as soon as they unpartitioned. I mean, they literally partitioned off the city. Like, if you didn't live below 14th Street,
it was could not go below
hard
14th.
To go below 14th Street for a couple of weeks, and then right when we could, we started performing again, and that was wild, you know, because people were still in a state of shock. They would come out just to have human contact because we were all so terrified.
Yeah.
And they would laugh in this weird way because they just wanted relief. They wanted some distraction, but it wasn't capable. You weren't capable of distracting yourself from the horror and that smell.
The smell will never, ever go away.
It was like burning metal for months. Brendan McDonald, and I'm going to drop the PW because we're talking about serious stuff, but how is the wife-to-be?
She's well. She's probably listening right now.
All right. Okay. Well, then PW McDonald is here with us in the studio.
You're a hard man, Merrick.
So now you were working at NYC, WNYC at the
time. Yeah, public radio here in New York.
And that's right by the Trade Center.
Just a few blocks away, right. And it was... Well, like yourself, I woke up to the news. I didn't know that it was happening, and then the whole day was a struggle to get into work because, as we all know, everything was so jammed up.
Mm-hmm.
But the major thing that I remember was how it lingered. And I don't just mean the smell, which is what we talked about. You know, I heard you guys mentioning that. But everything about that day lingered for everybody that worked down there for an inestimable amount of time. Like, I can't even remember when the point was that we didn't feel like going down there was hurtful, was something that bothered us greatly.
Yeah.
And there's something that's lost in that outside of New York City now. I remember that even with the second anniversary last year, that people were moving on, whether it was the television coverage or what. And I have a fear that that's especially going to happen this year with it being on a Saturday and people just kind of paying less attention to it. I think it's real important what we're doing today in talking about this. A lot of people do feel the way that we do about this, and it still hurts.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't go down to Ground Zero after it. I just couldn't go. It took me like a couple of months before I could go down there. My father came into town with his wife. Tourists, not tourists, but people who came, who wouldn't normally come to New York, flocked to New York to go down there and connect with Ground Zero. And I felt a little violated by some of that, by people flocking to New York, because I felt that on some level it was supportive, but on another level there was some rubbernecking going on, and it was a little disturbing.
Well, you know, there was at the time, too, a lot of people that flocked to New York because they really felt a tangible connection to the cops and firemen who in many cases lost their lives trying to save other people. I'll never forget as long as I live, because I knew people who were on the fire truck that was photographed on the front page of the Daily News heading over the Brooklyn Bridge toward Ground Zero.
Right.
I knew a guy I used to march with in the drum corps who died. He was a fire lieutenant, and his brother, who was a sergeant, also died, and neither one of them knew the other was in the Trade Center at the time. They both passed away.
It was just so hard to communicate.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people, I must say in fairness, a lot of people did want to connect in some way,
some small way with the heroism of the police and fire departments. I remember there was a line of people along the West Side Highway that had huge banners as the rescue workers and others came in and out of the Ground Zero area when they were doing like the 24-hour shifts of trying to help and that sort of thing. So there was that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm certainly talking about a small group. We'll take your calls after this, 866-303-2270 here on Air America Radio.
A bad vocabulary can sink you socially and professionally more quickly than bad breath. I'm Peter Bissonette, publisher of Million Dollar Vocabulary. If you fumble for the right words or use the wrong words, people make judgments about your background, your education, even your intelligence. Now, you can add hundreds of words to your vocabulary with Million Dollar Vocabulary, the cutting-edge learning system that teaches you how to lock words and their meanings into your memory so you can use them instantly and recall them for years. I can help you add hundreds of powerful words to your vocabulary, including words that are crucial for business success. It's fast, fun, and easy. You'll be amazed at the words you can use after 1 hour with Million Dollar Vocabulary.
Try Million Dollar Vocabulary risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-458-0599. 1-800-458-0599. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-458-0599.
Illegal use of the hands.
Defending champion USC.
On the offense.
Defending champion LSU.
Repeat for
the University of Michigan and Notre Dame.
The winningest college programs in history.
Texas at Oklahoma. Tennessee at Georgia.
Saturday is College Game Day on Sirius College Sports Radio. With the top 23 college football teams battling it out for the national championship trophy. Log on to Sirius.com or tune to the preview channel 184 for game times for your favorite team. Sirius Sports, the leader in sports play-by-play.
When was the last time you tested your smoke alarms? Last month? Last year? Can't remember? If you're not sure your smoke alarms are working, then how can you be sure you'll be protected if a fire breaks out? Don't gamble with your life and assume your smoke alarms are working. Test each one every month so you know they'll be ready to protect you and your family if there's a fire. Test your alarms for life.
Community groups do so much, especially helping to keep kids away from drugs. But do you know there's a way to make community groups stronger? It's called a community coalition. Community coalitions help local groups get together and get more done. Find out how your group can get involved at helpyourcommunity.org. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
If you think of a library as that place where shh is the only thing you hear, think again. Many are being forced to cut back hours, reduce services, even close their doors. The time to support your local library is now. Contact your library to find out how you can help keep the doors open. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. For more info, visit the American Library Association at www.ala.org.
Past the hour, it's a day of reflection, September 10th, 2004. Tomorrow is the anniversary of 9/11. I'm with Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Larry, thank you for holding. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Look, my feelings then were the same as they are now. Human evil should never surprise us, nor should human good. I mean, from the Dark Ages up through, you know, World Wars I and II, through Bosnia and Rwanda, where hundreds of thousands were butchered in front of their own children. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we lost 3,000 people, yes. But I'd like to add this, that our own government has supported murderers all over this world, from the Shah of Iran, who we helped put in power with our CIA in the 50s over a representative government at that time,
yes,
that we overthrew with our CIA. Now,
yes,
look, there are people in our government, there are a lot of people today who are naive, who don't know the 60s and 70s as I remember them. There are elements in our government that are absolutely lawless, that I would not put it past them to have even done this, to have done
let it happen. I'm with you.
Okay, and now, because, look, let's look at who benefits. people who want to put in repressive legislation benefit from this. Corporations who are militarily connected, who have all sorts of, you know, the military.
People who want to control the world benefit
from
this.
Well, also people who are making, you know, weaponry, who are making things like that, you know, latest tanks.
I'm with you, Larry. I mean, you know, if you're preaching to the choir here, I certainly appreciate your call. Absolutely.
All right,
but Larry, very worked up. He was holding on to talk about that, and, you know, he's got to go to work. Now we have Faraji in New Jersey. Good morning, Faraji.
Hi, Faraji.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
All right, how you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. You guys rock, man.
Thank you.
I just wanted to call. I'm one of the stars from HBO's Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry. I'll be on this Sunday doing my tribute to 9/11. I wanted to dedicate that not only just to the families of 9/11, but actually to the whole Air America family.
Oh, right on.
Oh, we appreciate that,
just,
man.
Just for the fact that I think a lot of things, I won't say that 9/11 could have been avoided if Air America was around, but I think a lot of the wool can't get pulled over our eyes now that we have an actual progressive voice on the radio.
Yeah.
Much appreciated, man.
Thanks a lot, Faraji. That's great, man. That's nice, man.
Yeah, it is.
I like watching that show sometimes. Because, you know, this whole deaf poetry thing and the whole new Eurekan scene and that came out of in that slam poetry, some of it's pretty funny.
Man.
A lot of those guys are like they're like comics, you know?
Well, I know Miguel Algarin for a long time, going back to the mid-70s when New Eurekans was young, as a matter of fact. And they've always done great work down there. And it's interesting that out of that very small little thing, blew up into this whole, you know, the whole slam poetry thing, the competitions that have taken place. All of that started in a very, very small space.
And I think that's where Deaf Poetry Jam came out of. It's a good show. It's a good-looking show, too. All right, here we go. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, New York has the highest taxes in the country. Raise taxes in your state to their level in solidarity. Two, studies say fewer kids are using LSD. Sit a child down and tell them, someday you're going to turn 20 and realize you've never tripped. Three, call Kerry campaign. Make sure their health care plan includes fully funded spa days. Four, Vegas' oldest showgirl is being forced to retire. Protest ageism until she's back in the show. Then protest sexism in the show. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, okay, the hurricanes have caused terrible destruction, but let's take a minute to think about how the hurricane feels, end quote. We got a great hour coming up next, this guy Paul Thompson.
Absolutely. We've got Paul Thompson in the next hour of Morning Sedition. He's author of The Terror Timeline, Mark Maron's Dream Diary, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, The Morning Sedition Business Report, The Dog of the Week, and so much more for you here at Air America Radio.
What was your name again, Barry?
Johnson.
Barry Johnson.
Yeah.
The U.S. Postal Service wants to remind everyone this year to protect themselves from becoming victims of identity theft. Your personal information is a gold mine for identity thieves. Identity theft is taking key pieces of someone's personal information, such as a name, address, or social security number, in order to impersonate them. For more information, log on to consumer.gov. A message from the U.S. Postal Service.
Immunizations prevent children from getting dangerous diseases like measles, polio, and mumps. But too many children aren't getting the immunizations they need. Parents can protect their children against 10 preventable childhood diseases in about 6 visits to the doctor. And most of them should happen before the child's 2 years old. So don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, call 1-800-232-2522. 1-800-232-2522.
Then,
I am the editor's photograph to delight those who would have melody on.
Now, Sirius Satellite Fresh, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. Still more new developments in the ongoing investigation into the prisoner abuse scandal in Abu Ghraib. Two senior Army generals testified before the House Armed Services Committee yesterday, saying Army jailers in Iraq kept dozens of detainees off the official rosters to hide them from the Red Cross inspectors. Practice purportedly requested by the Central Intelligence Agency was not only at Abu Ghraib, but other detention facilities as well. An Army investigation completed last year cited only 8 cases of the so-called ghost detainees. Army generals yesterday said the number of those abused and off the government's list was far higher than the official report. John Kerry continues to press the flesh in a bid to win voter support. Kerry warned black Americans yesterday to be wary of George W. Bush's overtures, calling him a wolf in sheep's clothing. Kerry also told the largest black religious organization in the country, the National Baptist Convention in New Orleans, that Bush feigns the Good Samaritan role, while in reality he turns his back on those who need.
The Good Samaritan gave both his heart and his help. It is clear for 4 years George W. Bush may have talked about compassion, but he's walked right by. He's seen people in need, but he's crossed over to the other side of the street.
John Kerry before the National Baptist Convention yesterday in New Orleans. Vice President Dick Cheney says he wants to clean up a controversy he ignited this week. On Tuesday, Cheney's comments about making the right choice in November were interpreted as suggesting the election of anyone but the Bush team all but guaranteed a terrorist attack. Now tells the Cincinnati Inquirer that what he meant was that whoever's elected president has to anticipate more attacks. Cheney was in Cincinnati for a town hall meeting with about 500 invited supporters. He vigorously defended the U.S. invasion of Iraq, drawing a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda terrorists, even though experts have long disputed such a connection. One of the foot soldiers in Osama bin Laden's terrorist network has surfaced in a videotape broadcast declaring the defeat of America in Iraq and Afghanistan is just a matter of time. It was a message to other members of the al-Qaeda terrorist network delivered just before the third anniversary of the September 11th attacks in the United States. Bin Laden's chief deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, made the statement on the tape broadcast by Al Jazeera. Zawahiri says Americans in both countries are between two fires, adding if they continue, they bleed to death, and if they withdraw, they also lose everything. U.S. forces have been facing fierce resistance, but military officials say they have the upper hand on the insurgents. U.S.-led forces staged a series of operations in rebel strongholds in Iraq yesterday, killing some two dozen insurgents in the town near the Syrian border. Those forces also bombed targets in Fallujah. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
This is Sirius Satellite Radio.
Hi, can you tell me which NFL games you're carrying this week?
We carry every single game, sir.
No, I'm serious. Which games do you carry?
No, we're serious, and we carry every NFL game every week.
Patriots?
You got it.
The Giants?
You're covered.
And Dallas?
Absolutely.
This is so cool.
The regular season's on. Every NFL game, every week, everywhere. Exclusively on Sirius NFL Radio. For the full game broadcast schedule, go to Sirius.com.
Your voice sounds familiar.
Dave Ramsey. And this is your Daily Money Makeover. Greg sent an email wanting to know what I think of prenuptial agreements. My opinion after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Greg wants to know what I think about prenuptial agreements. Hey, he asked.
I do not believe in prenuptial agreements. I think that's planning your divorce before it happens. I think that's an indication of you love money and your stuff more than you love the person you're getting ready to marry. You know, when you reach up there and the preacher says, and now you are one, he meant it. And if you cannot commit your life and all of your being and all of your stuff to that person, then you're not ready for marriage. Is that hardcore? No, it's really not. We live in a culture where 52% of the marriages are ending in divorce in the first 7 years, and the number one cause is money fights. And if you can't enter marriage with agreement on parenting issues, agreement on in-law issues, agreement on money, and agreement on religion, and with this wholehearted embrace of actually making it, you don't stand a shot.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Stuart, how are those hedges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're 5. Man, you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those hedges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of a lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those hedges?
Dad!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from
the cat.
Oh, and the neighbor's new car.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult.
So why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4 foot nine, they need a booster seat.
Dad, make it stop!
Come back here. You can do the neighbor shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Talk about the issue! Fire truck! Fire truck! Fire truck!
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful. And so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people. And neither do we. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Good morning, people. Good morning, geniuses. Good morning, all those with jobs. I hope everything's going okay so far. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
It's a somber morning in some respects. We are reflecting on 9/11, which is tomorrow, the third anniversary of the terrorist attacks on this city, New York City. And to this day, our entitled, arrogant, smug, stubborn, faux Christian, AWOL, blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's Republican death cult, hell-bent on breaking this country, has still not made any progress in some respects in containing terrorism. Quite the contrary, as it seems, terrorism is worse than it's ever been since 9/11 on a global scale. Al-Zawahiri, Ayman al-Zawahiri, 2 days before the anniversary of 9/11, is on television.
Looking like he's talking on Oprah.
Quote, the defeat of America in Iraq and Afghanistan has become just a matter of time. With God's help, end quote. This guy is on television. This guy is one of the masterminds of the attacks on New York City. He is one of the masterminds of Al-Qaeda. And he is on TV, you know, looking fairly well for a terrorist mastermind, for an evil bastard, looking pretty healthy, undaunted by the low level of troops in Afghanistan, 16,000 troops in Afghanistan. There's almost that many cops here in New York.
Well, there's more cops in
there. Oh, well, there you go.
More than 2.5 times more cops.
How do you like that? So where are all the troops? In Iraq, managing an out-of-control situation that didn't need to happen. You know, and they keep running on this idea. You know, the American people, those who were willing to believe it, have been duped in some sort of strange, you know, fear-based three-card money game into thinking that Iraq and terrorism, that Saddam is Osama, but Osama is still Osama, and Osama is still in hiding. Osama is still at large. Al-Zawahiri, his right-hand man, this Egyptian doctor mastermind of 9/11 and many other attacks on the world through Al-Qaeda, is giving out statements. He's having press conferences.
He's having press conferences. He's looking like he's on Oprah. He's saying to people, look, the Mujahideen, who I represent, control large areas of southern and eastern Afghanistan. Now, the U.S. military has been telling us that they are in control of Afghanistan, that the forces of Hamid Karzai are in control of Afghanistan. But, Mark, we just spoke to someone a couple of weeks back who said essentially the Karzai has become the mayor of Kabul.
Yes, and we'll talk to somebody in our third hour, always worth hanging out, for Peter Bergen. Peter Bergen, who wrote Terror, Inc., he's a reporter for, I believe, Time and other magazines. You see him on CNN sometimes. He's a real, you know, he knows his stuff about Al-Qaeda. I read Terror Incorporated. It's a mind-blowing, in-depth journalistic, you know, book about the roots of Al-Qaeda and how Al-Qaeda started. Come into the studio momentarily, Paul Thompson, who put together this masterpiece of obsessive journalism called The Terror Timeline, which is a
sourced by the sentence.
Yes, yes. A minute-by-minute, day-by-day history of 9/11 going back to 1979, when the CIA destabilized Afghanistan in order to bait Russia into attacking it, creating a Vietnam-like situation, and thus creating the Mujahideen and the Afghan Arabs and Osama bin Laden, initially, you know, creating the incentive for them to unite.
You know, the terror timeline, Paul Thompson's book, is a journalist's dream. Okay, this is the kind of thing you sit there and you look at two pages and you say, gee, I wish I had written this because it is so well-sourced.
I'm so glad that it's a book because I went to cooperativeresearch.org,
mm-hmm.
which is where it was originally.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to print this out. You know, and
somebody like, did it for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and it was like 1,200, 1,500 pages. But he'll be up in a minute. Let's talk a little more about the failed war on terror post 9/11 as we reflect about 9/11. I mean, in Jakarta, an embassy explosion killed 9 people, 173 people. Now, Jakarta in Indonesia, which is one of the heaviest, it might be the heaviest Muslim population.
It's the most populous most populous Muslim country in the world. It's, I think, the fourth or fifth most populous country in the world, period.
Yeah, and Jamaah Islamiyah, a Southeast Asian terror group linked to Al-Qaeda, purportedly claimed responsibility for the attack, saying it was punishing Australia because it was an Australian embassy that blew up for supporting the war in Iraq. Now, there's something very clear about these attacks, certainly like the one in the Philippines that, you know, they pulled their troops out, the ones in Spain that changed, that might have changed. It certainly influenced the election and certainly influenced Spain to pull their troops out of Iraq. And now this one, Australia, they are clearly well organized. They are undaunted. Their leader was on television, you know, here and around the world 2 days ago. And they're going after the countries that are vulnerable and have the fewest amount of soldiers in Iraq and that they might have, some power in swaying their leader's decision to keep the soldiers there. So they are fighting a smart war to some degree.
Well, you know, Jamaah Islamiyah is the organization that was blamed for the 2002 Bali bombing that killed 200-some-odd people. I mean, 202 people in all. These folks seem to be immune from either U.S. or even, in the case of Indonesia, Indonesian government pressure, Filipino government pressure. They seem to be able to move from place to place with relative ease. They seem to be able to take these kinds of vicious, violent actions with relative ease. And the question has to be asked, and we'll get to this with Paul Thompson as well, what if Bush had done things differently? What if Bush had started out and stayed on course in terms of going after Osama bin Laden? If you had to take out the Taliban to do so, fine. But going after Osama bin Laden, capturing him, and really trying to strike at Al-Qaeda from the neck down.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to also to talk to him about what Bush's faults are. You know, certainly, you know, we know that, you know, the not prioritizing terrorism after the PDB and before is clearly a fault, and that he could have, in some respects, you know, I believe he could have stopped 9/11.
His people came in ignorant.
Yes, and
ignorant in 2001.
Absolutely. You know, Cold War minded and dead set on attacking Iraq, which they've done, and which they've, you know, created a sort of, you know, as Jerry Nadler said earlier today when we talked to him, a petri dish, a headquarters, a new breeding ground of terrorism. And I'm going to be very, and also, Paul Thompson will address many of the omissions and a lot of the facts that people don't really know. And maybe, hopefully, we can choose a couple sections of this tremendous tome to focus on. Is that the right word? Tome?
Tome is the right word.
To focus on that are the most sort of meaty and juicy. And I highly recommend this book, and I can't wait to talk to him. And so we're going to have that and The Dream Diary and more reflections about 9/11. It's 14 past the hour. We'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
Are you a homeowner in need of a refi to pay off debt, strapped for cash, and need to lower your monthly payments? Save now before rates go back up. Even with less than perfect credit, you can still grab a great rate, even below 6%. That's right. If you own your own home, we can lower your monthly payments. Get cash in your hand, even if you have mortgage late or a past bankruptcy.
This is Jim Eichenbaum with Omega Mortgage Acceptance Corporation. And even if you have less than perfect credit, we can still help you take advantage of rates less than 6%. So don't be misled by empty promises made by other lenders who keep asking for more time and paperwork. At Omega, there's no bait and switch, no upfront fees, just straight talk and honesty.
No need for mountains of documentation or tons of paperwork. We don't even need tax returns. Great if you're self-employed. Just call 888-32-APPLY today. Get approved in less than 20 minutes. We specialize in refis for homeowners just like you. Call 888-32-APPLY right now and lower your monthly payment. Pay off debt, even get cash. Call 888-32-APPLY today. That's 888-322-7759. Licensed by the Cal DRE, number 01411312. 888-32-APPLY.
Serious! is giving away a Larson Senza sports boat.
No purchase necessary.
It's awesome!
Must be 18 or older to enter.
Hey, can I tell them?
Valid in the 48 contiguous states.
It even comes with Sirius.
And it's online at 11:59 p.m. Eastern.
It's really cool!
On September 30th, 04.
Can I get a word in?
For official rules, see Sirius.com/Larson or select Larson dealer.
Boat, summer, water, fun!
Void where prohibited.
Are you done?
Yes.
Good! Why don't you get out so I can see how fast we're going?
Do your children like to hug each other? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. In our home, we hug our kids a lot, but have noticed that our children don't hug each other very much. One of our kids loves to hug. The others act like it's no big deal. But hugging with frequency and sincerity is food for the soul. So guess what? We're teaching our kids how to hug each other. First, a hug has to be a full embrace. One arm, half-hearted hugs don't count. Second, it has to be at least 10 seconds to be a good one. Sure, you're going to get some moans, groans, and eye rolls, but maybe after they've hugged enough, it will become a cherished habit. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
If you look in your kitchen cabinet, chances are good that it contains iodized salt. Not so for millions of people all over the world who don't know to use iodized salt or can't get it. Iodine deficiency is the major cause of severe learning difficulties in children and can even cause a drop in IQ of 10 to 15 points. The solution? Use small amounts of iodized salt regularly. Help future generations reach their full potential. And please, pass the iodized salt.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio. We got a guest coming up who wrote the Terra Timeline, which, you know, so hang out because I'm going to do my dream diary in a minute. But this book is, this thing is awesome. And this guy is, I don't even know if he sleeps. But we'll talk to him one second. I was just at the therapist yesterday. You know, I downloaded most of my dreams into his head, but here's last night's. I'm at Camp David with my dead cat Butch and the four cats I adopted. So me and these five cats, all wearing matching Che t-shirts, are strolling down a wooded lane, taking in the crisp fall air, and I'm thinking, not bad. I could sign a peace treaty here. Butch sneers at me and says, yes, my little consumer, it is beautiful, but at what cost? As Shelley wrote, power, like a desolating pestilence, pollutes whatever it touches. The four strays nod in agreement and sneer at me, too. Great. Pretty soon they're going to start quoting dead English poets at me as well. We stop outside one of the cabins and look in a window. Oh, my God. There, wearing a flight suit and a cowboy hat, is George W. Bush, leaning over a table, snorting an enormous line of Coke with a rolled-up $100 bill. A president going up the nose of a president. There's a first. W. rubs some blow on his gums and starts stamping his feet. Yee-haw! I turn to Bush and I say, wow. I guess Kitty Kelly was right. Only Butch was running towards the front door of the cabin. Butch, what the hell are you doing? Extending my mind, you tedious bourgeois? She says, and before I can stop her, she's in there with a 20 up her little cat nostril, hoovering up Bush's blow. Butch looks at me and says, finally, somebody who knows how to live. Must have been good stuff, and it's Bush, so why wouldn't it be? Because it kicked in right away. Pretty soon I see Butch and W dancing around to Donna Summer, then having a heart-to-heart talk about how much he hates his dad, and then they're writing a screenplay together, then they order 12 pizzas, then they do more blow. Wow, which is weird because who can eat on blow? This goes on for hours and I fall asleep. I wake up and I see Butch and W playing Twister. Then I realize I've lost the other four cats. I bolt upright and start looking around frantically. Finally, after checking four or five others, the cabins, you know, I look inside one secluded cabin. There they are. They're safe. Only they're doing bong hits with Laura Bush. I round up all five of them and drive them to rehab. I woke up and my bed was filled with cotton swabs. There you go. You're very patient through that, Paul. Yeah. Paul Thompson, our guest, who is the, I don't want to say creator, because he's a journalist, and the accumulator, I don't even know how to, but he's definitely the writer of the Terra Timeline. It's a year-by-year, day-by-day, minute-by-minute, it's a comprehensive chronicle of the road to 9/11, And America's response, and Paul sat very patiently, not laughing, looking at me like, what am I doing here? What is this man doing?
He was looking for the word exit somewhere in the room.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning.
Do you sleep? I mean, this book, when I first saw this on the internet at cooperativeresearch.org, I was like, oh my God, this is a guy after my own heart. I thought, thank God there's someone out there not sleeping, doing this homework, doing the research. You put it all together. You took the history of 9/11 all the way back to 1979. Now, when you what happened on 9/11 to initiate or to instigate or to, you know, to get this momentum going to create this book?
Well, actually, really nothing for me. It wasn't until about a year after. For the first year, I just was like everybody else and just checking out the news and, oh, that's interesting, but didn't have any particular focus. It wasn't until it was that August 6th, 2001 Bush memo, the PDB, the Bin Laden determined the strike in the U.S., and they had Colleen Rowley, you know, she came and became the Time Woman of the Year. All these stories.
Oh, the whistleblower, the woman from Minnesota, yeah.
All these stories started coming out, and that's what piqued my interest about middle of 2002. So I've been getting pretty obsessive for the last 2 years working on this.
So now, like, in the process of doing this, like, were there points, like, what, go into some couple of the points where you're like, oh man, this is insane, you know, like, you know, I know there's got to be like at least, you know, 50 to 100 points like that, but what was the initially the most mind-blowing connection that you made with this book?
Well, you're right. I mean, I think there's so many things that people don't know about 9/11 and the war on terror that they really need to know. And What blows my mind is how many times there's some kind of really important story that does get in the mainstream media, because everything in here, I got, this comes from 5,000 source articles that I've collected, and it's all quote-unquote mainstream, New York Times, you know, CBS, all this kind of stuff. And so you'd think something gets out in some kind of big publication like that, and then it would get all over the place. But oftentimes they just die. Like one that I like to bring up as an example is a couple months before 9/11, according to 60 Minutes, the Egyptian intelligence agency passed a message on to the CIA, and they said, we've got word, we've got a mole in Afghanistan talking to, you know, to Al-Qaeda people over there. And there are 20 Al-Qaeda agents who have come to the U.S. for a suicide mission. Four of them are training on light aircraft, which, of course, is almost exactly what happened.
What date was this?
This came out in 2002. This was on 60 Minutes.
Right.
And they asked, you know, they told all the CIA. CIA said, we're not interested. They didn't want any more information about it.
And how can you not get paranoid? I mean, you must have been sitting there going, like, they knew. They were part of it. They were, you know, were you?
Well, you know, I go back and forth. My thing is, I want to be the person who's putting out the facts, and I'm not theorizing. There's a lot of other people who are theorizing, but I want to be neutral and just say, okay, these are the facts, read the book, or check out the website, and make up your own mind. I don't want to be pushing something down other people's throats.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned an Egyptian warning. Your book talks about other warnings on the international stage, even before the August 6th presidential daily briefing. Talk about some of the other warnings that weren't heeded.
Oh, so many warnings. The whole first chapter is just dozens and dozens of warnings. And I'm really disappointed with the 9/11 Commission, because there's so many things that have come out in the mainstream media they just plain ignored. Like, I wrote an essay online talking about all the different warnings from foreign governments. And there were all kinds of governments that warned the U.S. in really explicit terms, just like that Egyptian one.
Yeah. The Israelis did. Israelis,
you know, there's a report from Der Spiegel, which is one of the biggest things in Germany, biggest newspapers over there. They said that the Israelis actually gave the U.S. the names of Mohammed Atta, of some of the top hijackers. They gave them a list of all kinds of terrorists in the U.S. There's so many warnings, and of course, none of this has come out, virtually none of this has come out in the 9/11 Commission report.
We're talking to Paul Thompson. The book is The Terror Timeline. It's a year-by-year, day-by-day, minute-by-minute, a comprehensive chronicle of the road to 9/11 and America's response. I mean, it comes in at like, you know, 600 pages almost here. And it's just, you know, it's one of those books where you look at it and you feel like you are the possessor of secret information. that now, you know, just having this book on your shelf will make you feel like I have it all. I know. I don't need to pick it up. I know if it's there. I need to, everything I need to know about it is there. So let's talk about some, like, the way you've broken down the book, if I can just look at the table of contents, is part one, before 9/11, and that includes warning signs, insider trading, and other foreknowledge. Now, lay that on me. Now, a lot, you know, we
insider
heard about,
trading?
Well, just talk about the stock market and how some stocks, you know, there was a lot of action on United, right, and the airline stocks.
Oh, yeah. Well, even more important than that is there were trades in Europe, in Germany and other countries where, like, the head of the Bundesbank, the big bank there,
yeah,
in Germany, said that basically there is no way this is chance. This is chance that this is just coincidence of these numbers. And this is not some kind of foreknowledge. It would be one of the greatest coincidences in history. And a lot of countries have started investigations after 9/11, probably about a dozen countries, into the issue of were people getting money based on what they knew, you know, betting on, not just on those airline stocks, but on gold, on oil, on five-year treasury bills. There was one report from Europe of a single trade of $5 billion.
Wow.
So we're talking
billion with a B.
Billion with a B.
Now, as
we're talking a lot of money. And the 9/11 Commission report came out with just a little footnote saying we didn't find any evidence of insider trading. But I find the evidence so persuasive. There's so many different accounts.
Wow.
I think this is another example.
Who was doing it?
Of their whitewash.
Yeah, who's whitewash?
Well, of 9/11 Commission's whitewash. This is an issue, I think. There's a lot of issues they just want to go away because it's quite embarrassing. But one thing that the 9/11 Commission did that I thought was very interesting, one of the few things that was an interesting fact that came out, was they said in one of their reports that in the summer before 2001, Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan was actually publicly talking about the 9/11 plot.
Yes.
He was speaking in front of large crowds, talking in mosques, and he was saying things like, let's all have a prayer for the 20 operatives on the mission in the U.S. And you've got like, you know, Johnny Walker Lynn, the so-called Marine Taliban guy.
Sure,
people
sure.
have heard of him. And he was there for, like, you know, 2 weeks, not even, and people are already in Afghanistan telling them all kinds of details about the plot, the planes that, you know, that are involved and everything. So it's just such an open secret there. The 9/11 Commission says that the secret spread throughout the fundamentalist Muslim community throughout the world. So the idea of there being foreknowledge, I mean, so many people know about this, you know, and been betting on it. Of course, if you have these people all over the world knowing about that, wouldn't you, if you had some secret knowledge, maybe say, hey, I'll put a bet on that airline and make myself some easy money.
Who was it, though? I mean, was there one specific person, a group of people that made this money on the insider?
Well, they've never really been able to figure out who it was. Something I've discovered since I put this book out is another book that's come out that some guy actually talked to a banker in United Arab Emirates, and he was saying that in his bank, he's got the financial transactions of some of this insider trading that was with some Al-Qaeda operatives.
Wow, well, hold that thought. We're going to find out what you think, whether or not Bush knew about it. So we'll talk about that after the break.
All right, we'll be right back with Paul Thompson, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, the Morning Sedition Business Report, the Dog of the Week, and more here on Air America Radio.
Candidate for governor, Dickie Pillager, has a message for you, the voter.
I always turn to nature to make sense of the world, but our environment is under siege. Under siege, under fire.
Cut!
Not
under
attack.
Anything, Dickie. It's endangered.
He's got big ideas about the environment.
Have to get our priorities straight. That whole environmental arena, that's a priority.
Richard Dickie Pillager on law enforcement.
Frontier justice. All you needed was a good strong rope and a tree to hang it from.
Social issues.
Organizations formed to help these things will be happy to pitch in if only government would get out of their way.
Cooking.
If you're going to have a front burner, which is where you want your priorities, it's like cooking.
Finally, a candidate with all the right answers. Finally, a candidate with a vision for America. In the new movie from acclaimed director John Sayles, Silver City, rated R for language. Coming soon to select cities.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. A new study has revealed health care costs continues to soar as family premiums and employer-sponsored plans jumped 11.2%. It's the fourth consecutive year of double-digit growth. The study by the Kaiser Family Foundation comes on the heels of the latest attack by John Kerry, accusing President Bush of failing to assist cash-strapped Americans on reducing health care costs. Still more government testimony reveals that the Central Intelligence Agency gave the green light to Army jailers to keep scores of Iraqi detainees off the prison rosters in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere. It's the latest development in the ongoing probe of prisoner abuse, showing it was far worse than first thought. Vice President Dick Cheney says the nation is not getting the full picture on the economy. Cheney is suggesting that a lot of Americans are faring better than what's reported because they're making money off eBay. And Russian officials say they've identified 10 of the 30 attackers who seized the Beslan school last week near the border of Chechnya. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions. The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather, Sirius 150 to 159.
Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Renee wants to know the difference between an educational savings account and a mutual fund. I'll answer her email next.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Renee emailed wanting the information on how educational savings accounts work. Is an educational IRA the same thing as the mutual fund you discussed? No. A mutual fund is a mutual fund. That's how you invest into a series, a group of stocks. An educational savings account is one thing you can do with a mutual fund. You could also fund a Roth IRA or a 401k or fund nothing and just have a mutual fund. The mutual fund is treated for tax purposes a certain way if you put a certification on it or stamp on it. If we stamp it, ESA, educational savings account, that stamp says how it's treated for tax purposes. If you don't stamp it that or Roth IRA, then it's just taxed as it grows in most cases. The investment is different than how the investment is treated. And how it's treated in that case is you're funding your kid's college with a mutual fund, and you're not having to pay taxes on that mutual fund that you're using to save for college because you put it into an educational savings account.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Here.
33 past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. The book is The Terror Timeline, year by year, day by day, minute by minute, a comprehensive chronicle of the road to 9/11 and America's response. Paul Thompson is the author, accumulator, obsessive person. I'm assuming. Am
sure.
I wrong? Yeah. Because this book has got everything in it. Now, how could Bush not have known? I mean, I'm not asking you, I know you're a journalist, you want to, stay sort of not partial to this, but, I mean, if you were to read your book, if I was to go, hey, how you doing, I'm Paul Thompson, take a look at this, and tell me what you think afterwards, what would you come out with?
Well, I think some people might come out with that. Some people might come out with just sheer incompetence, because the other thing you could say is just that they had terrorism on such a low priority that it didn't matter, they were blinded, that they had their other things, they had their issues, they're talking about the missile shield, they're talking about Iraq, and so people just kept putting this information and they didn't want to hear it. So that is another possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you're looking at the issue of if Bush knew or not, or if people knew, the way I look at it is that if you're a criminal investigator, you've got to consider all the possibilities. And there are a lot of people who think that. There's a Zogby poll. They're a pretty big polling company. Just a couple weeks ago came out with a poll saying that almost 50% of the people in New York City think that there's actually foreknowledge by the Bush administration. So there's a lot of people. And there's some interesting things that might lead you to suspect that. And there's a lot of different explanations, a lot of different ways you could go with it. One fact that I just came across recently that really surprised me is that Richard Clark, you've heard of him, he's the counterterrorism guy under Clinton and Bush. He talks about, I think it was mentioned in New Yorker magazine, he talked about that in 1999, they intercepted a message from Hamid Ghul, who's the head of the Pakistani intelligence agency, and he's a big supporter of bin Laden. He's publicly going out and talking. He's former head of the intelligence agency, I should say, and then some Taliban people in Afghanistan. And in the message, he says, now you remember when Clinton tried to bomb bin Laden and dropped some missiles over there, he said in the message that, don't worry, there's not going to be another missile attack. You know, I know this from my sources, and if there is, I'll give you guys advance warning like I did last time.
Wow.
So, you know, this to me suggests that there's somebody in the U.S. who's communicating and collaborating with these kind of people. And we see all kinds of, once you start looking into this, it's just the world of intrigue and spies, and there's so many things that are going on that who knows what kind of way things happened before 9/11.
You're talking to a guy, me, I read, you know, Robert Anton Wilson's, you know, Illuminatus trilogy as some sort of truth. So, you know, like, so I see a book like this, and I'm like, oh, my God, all the answers are here. It's all connected because, like, you know, when you start to think about literally the Bush family and the bin Laden family made their money through the same resource and through the same connections.
Well, that's another explanation you might put for this, is just that they were blinded because of these kinds of connections. That, for instance, there was just a no-go, like with FBI investigations, if something was related to the bin Ladens, people just turning a blind eye. So were there systemic problems like that? Like Greg Palast, you know, he's a really great journalist.
The best democracy money can buy.
He's done some really good investigative journalism, pointing out how there were FBI investigations that were closed down because of, you know, potentially ties between the bin Laden family and, you know, people in Washington. There was actually one case that you may have heard from him where there were two nephews of Osama bin Laden living in Washington, living three blocks away from a couple of the hijackers at the same time the hijackers were there. And that investigation was canceled. And then those two guys, these nephews, they were on the Saudi flights a few days after 9/11, able to fly out of the country. You know, they've got all kinds of dirt on these people, ties to terrorism, and they're just able to fly out.
Coincidence? No way! Unbelievable, man. This book is like, it's just holding it is blowing my mind. You know, you got, the chapters are broken into these different segments, like I said, before 9/11, the terrorists, but you've got subheadings like the Pakistani ISI, Saudi Arabia and the bin Laden family, Israel, Iraq. These are issues that are relatively unaddressed by this administration, even in the media that, you know, no one talks about the Saudis' complicity in this whole thing, that in depth. I mean, Craig Unger did in the Michael Moore movie, but it runs pretty deep. I mean, the Saudis sort of blatantly funded terrorism for a long time.
Yeah, just a couple days ago, Bob Graham, the senator, he's been talking about how
in his book,
where the Saudis, he's got evidence that the Saudis were directly funding a couple of the hijackers, or indirectly, but you know, we can see the ties. And I have that same thesis in my book where there's so much evidence about the Saudi ties to these two hijackers, the two guys living in San Diego.
Unbelievable. Let's take some calls. Stay with us. We're going to stay with Paul Thompson here. The book is A Terror Timeline. You can get it on morningsedition. You can probably get it at airamericaradio.com for a discount. And if you got questions for him or you have reflections about 9/11, call us at 866-303-2270. We'd love to hear from you here on Air America Radio. Call us here at Morning Sedition at 666.
Wait a minute.
Oh, sorry. That's the mark of the beast.
That's 866-303-2270.
That's 866-303-2270.
This is Sirius Satellite Radio.
Hi. Can you tell me which NFL games you're carrying this week?
We carry every single game, sir.
No, I'm serious. Which games do you carry?
No, we're serious. And we carry every NFL game every week.
Patriots?
You got it.
The Giants?
You're covered.
And Dallas?
Absolutely.
This is so cool.
The regular season's on. Every NFL game. Every week. Everywhere. Exclusively on Sirius NFL Radio. For the full game broadcast schedule, go to Sirius.com.
Your voice sounds familiar.
We are the email generation. I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute.
It's safe to say that the majority of us do more corresponding through the computer than through the mail. And our kids have practically grown up on email. In fact, when's the last time they sent a postcard, a letter, or a thank you note? Well, there's something about sending a letter or card the old-fashioned way that makes the person who gets it feel special. So have your kids write a letter to grandma or a thank you note to their teacher or someone else whose day they want to make. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Our young people need us now more than ever.
Everyone's popping pills and smoking grass.
Sure, they look up to our superstars, but what they really want is the time and energy of caring adults who make a difference in their lives. A personal hero. You can be that hero. Get involved and help keep our young people drug-free. Your time is their future.
He's not on drugs. He's just weird.
To learn more, call 1-800-729-6686. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Well, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment to rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
I get that in.
Fire truck! 42 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues. And by the way, Paul Thompson is still here. I had that moment where I'm like, should I just go into the bit or should I say Paul Thompson is still here? He's still here. He's going to sit through another comedy bit and look baffled at me, as he just did when Fire Truck came out of nowhere. I can't explain that right now. We have more important things to
take
do.
Take up a whole segment.
Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 73. Leaders of Iraq. Yes, good morning. Hey, you guys are getting reality TV shows. Wow, nice work. You're starting to lighten up. Not everything has to be Wrath of Allah, Death to Infidels, and all that stuff. Okay. Sometimes you need Bob Saget. Hey, no, take it easy. No, really, it sounds like a solid lineup. You've got your home rebuilding show called Labor and Materials. Brilliant. You've got nothing but fixer-uppers in this place. Well, there's another fixer-upper. And then you have a show called Iraq's Most Melancholy Home Videos. That one will be a non-starter over here. But hey, you know your market better than we do. And something called Blessed Wedding, which will be terrific if we don't show up and vomit. Sorry about that one. Our bad. The point is, democracy is fun. TV is fun. Enjoy yourself. Life is short. Yes, especially here. And once you get into the habit of staying home and watching your neighbors on TV, all your ethnic differences will start to melt away, along with your critical thinking. Until then, good luck and God bless. This is Day 73 of Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Live Free or Die. Tell me about these events that are going on around the country, around the world, this weekend. Are they symposiums? Are they speeches? Are they comings togethers? Are they goings ons?
Yeah, there's all kinds of things going on. There's a lot of people, they want answers. People are starting to mobilize. You can go to www.summeroftruth.org to check out some of the events. I'm going to be speaking along with a lot of other people tomorrow night in New York City. It's going to be another event in Washington, D.C. also tomorrow night. And if you're in those places, you should really go and check it out.
Great.
All right. Paul, why should people care, bottom line? about some of the findings that you've uncovered in this book. I mean, for a lot of people, they have seemingly managed to link 9/11 to Saddam, to George W. Bush's leadership, those sorts of things, whether positive or negative. Why should people care?
Well, there's just so much misinformation out of this. We got, there's that poll a couple months ago talking about how 70% of the people thought that Saddam Hussein was the mastermind behind 9/11. If we're going to go forward as a country, we've got to understand what actually happened on 9/11. This is really important stuff for the, you know, for the future of this country. We've got to find out what really, you know, what actually happened on that day. What are the real answers? There's so many unanswered questions.
Absolutely.
We need a new investigation, in my opinion, a real independent investigation.
And they should, you should just give them your book, because you've done most of the work for them. Bob in New York, what's going on?
Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
Love your show.
Thanks.
Great show. Been doing liberal radio for myself on a non-commercial dial for about 25 years.
Wow.
Good to hear you.
Thank you.
And what I wanted to ask Mr. Thompson is the reaction from the 9/11 families.
Oh, good question.
How would you characterize, you know, what they've been feeling and what they've been doing behind the scenes?
Okay, thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, the 9/11 families have been very supportive. I've gotten a lot of support, especially from the so-called Jersey Girls, people like Kristen Breitweiser, some of the really outspoken people. I was at an event last night talking, and there was a 9/11 victim's relative who was very passionate talking about the need for answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of feeling amongst them where they want the 9/11 Commission recommendations to happen, because they want to see something come out of all this, but they also are very dissatisfied and they feel like that's not enough and the questions still haven't been answered and they want more answers. They want to know what happened and why their relatives died.
Mm, got it. Mm-hmm. It's just like in this book, I have to assume that people who lost people and also just, you know, anybody who was, you know, really, really disturbed, as most people were, would definitely seek out the information in this book. James in New York, how are you?
Hi, yes, James.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Love your show. I just wanted to ask if, if he finds any correlation of a cover-up, you know, when he looks into the attack on the Pentagon. Because, I mean, there's a lot of facts there that don't add up. The guy drove the plane over 500 miles an hour, 2 feet off the ground, no aircraft debris.
Are you going with the missile theory?
Well, I don't know. A lot of people, there's been a lot of witnesses in that, and there's a lot of pictures. I mean, the FBI snapped up all the record of it. Oh, that's on video. They grabbed everything. You don't see any kind of video of the actual impact, even though there was surveillance video. What do you think about that? Is that something that should be examined a little more closely?
Thanks for your question, James. Good question. Do you have anything on that, Paul?
Well, I definitely think it should be examined more closely. We know, for instance, there's surveillance videos that have been confiscated, and we've never seen the crash. You know, I don't know why they're not letting us see what
I just saw a little. See, I didn't know about this particular conspiracy theory. I only have room in my head for so many of them. I will become, you know, antisocial and get a weird despondent look in my eyes. But I saw some pictures recently of the hole and of the. What is the speculation, though? Who would have carried out the attack in the conspiracy theory?
I mean, yeah, people would say that if the plane didn't hit the Pentagon, that's evidence of some really deep Bush administration involvement. But my personal take is that I'm not an engineer. I don't really know how to interpret those photos, and that's not really somewhere I go in my book, you know, which is all based on mainstream media, and there really hasn't been much in the mainstream media about that, so I don't really talk about that. I think that's a really intriguing thing, but there's so much more that is, you know, much more definitive and not so speculative, and I want to focus on those things.
But also you're saying, why not release the information
oh, yeah.
that we were not allowed to have, and that's what that guy's saying, and that's what I was sort of provoked to think about the other day, is like, what are they hiding? And it's one of these things like the Kennedy assassination that, you know, who the hell knows when all the facts are going to be in?
Yeah, and just about, I mean, there was this quote from Bob Graham. He said something like, you know, we're never going to know who the real people behind 9/11 are until maybe 30, 40 years from now when all these documents, you know, come out after people die. I don't want to wait that long. I want to know now while it's still relevant, while it still matters, and, you know, it should matter in the November election. People should know what happened on 9/11. You know, I cannot believe that the Bush administration had the gall to sort of in this last convention, you know, go all this 9/11 hype. It'd be kind of like FDR, you know, President Roosevelt hyping Pearl Harbor when he's running for re-election. It doesn't make any sense.
Interesting.
Well, look, the book is The Terror Timeline. It's a year-by-year, day-by-day, minute-by-minute, a comprehensive chronicle of the road to 9/11 and America's response. Get the book. I mean, you can go look at it online, but, you know, Paul Thompson has done his homework. I don't get this excited about many things. If you trust me at all, and if you're as crazy and conspiratorial and in search of truth as much as I know a lot of you are, it's a great book to have, and thanks for talking to us, Paul. Really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll be back with the Morning Sedition Business Report and Mark Riley's Dog of the Week. It's 50 past the hour. We'll talk to you in a minute on Air America Radio.
Stop whining. That's what head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, told workers who just lost their high-tech jobs to overseas outsourcing. Stop whining. Analysts say this is just the beginning. Millions of more jobs could be lost in the next few years. But it's good for the U.S. economy, according to Donahue. Good for the U.S. economy? Are they kidding? These high-tech jobs were supposed to be the jobs of the future. Jobs with good pay and good benefits. Now, millions are at risk. That's why we, the Communications Workers of America, are doing something about it. We're fighting to end tax breaks that encourage companies to ship our jobs overseas. We're helping tech workers organize so they have strength at the bargaining table when it comes to salary, health care and pension benefits, and working conditions. Learn more at techsunite.org, because America's future is on the line. A message from the Communications Workers of America, the Union for the Information Age, and proud supporter of Air America.
Hi, this is Steve Earle reminding that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jean Monheit. Register to vote.
In this particular election, it's going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
What's up, this shifty? Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Mark. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher, Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. Number 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. Number 6, name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Are you in the car right now with your kids? Sounds like the perfect time to ask them about the drug ecstasy. Go on, ask them. You have time right now to ask them. Think there's a better time? Maybe when you can sit down and have the talk? Aren't you sitting right now? The time to have the talk is right now. Lock the doors if you have to, because they're sitting right there. Go on, ask your kids about ecstasy. Right now. If you don't do it now, do you think you ever will? Ask your kids about E right now. Then go to AskYourKidsAboutE.com.
Here we go, 53 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. There's the opening bell, and that means it's time for the Morning Sedition Friday Business Report. This week brought mixed news for investors, according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, or the NSDUH, and ecstasy use. NSDUH. LSD and ecstasy use among young people is down by nearly half. The good news is this. More kids are binge drinking and downing prescription pills than ever before. Now, if you've listened carefully to my past programs, I'm sure you've diversified your portfolio to include high-risk, short-term profit modules like crack, ecstasy, and window pain, while devoting a healthy portion to safer blue chips like Colt 45 and your dying granny's OxyContin. You see, X and LSD are usually made by small mom-and-pop organizations, not a safe place for your investment dollar. Whereas pills and booze are made by respected corporate monoliths. Reliable, trustworthy, well-known. Why, even the words give you a good feeling. Pills and booze. Pills and booze. Feels right to say it. They go so well together, just like cigarettes and coffee after bad sex. Don't forget, more beer drinking means more jobs for American beer makers. More pill taking means more jobs for American pill makers. And more beer and pills in general means more business for your local doctor. It's a win, win, win. So if you really want to put Americans back to work, have a beer, have 12, and some prescription drugs with your family and the neighbor's kids and the dog, and whatever you do, don't become a crack whore. This has been the Morning Sedition Friday Business Report. And now it's time for a reflective Dog of the Week from Mark Riley.
Mark Maron, Saturday marks the third anniversary of the September 11th terror attacks. Though it may seem like restating the obvious, the man who masterminded them remains at large. Osama bin Laden's crimes make the designation Dog of the Week seem trivial by comparison, yet his freedom 3 years after the attacks speaks volumes about the priorities of the Bush administration. Aside from murdering more than 3,000 people, bin Laden heads a terror network with absolutely no regard for the lives of innocent people anywhere. He gives lie to the very cause he champions. 3 years ago, President Bush said killing or capturing this drug-dealing lowlife was the top priority of his administration. Despite Bush's assertion that three-quarters of al-Qaeda is dead or in custody, bin Laden remains at large. All too often, progressives are accused of not being hard enough on America's enemies. Not so in this case. Osama bin Laden has much to answer for, and every time al-Qaeda is able to communicate with the outside world, it spits on the graves of innocent people here and around the world. Osama bin Laden's continued freedom is our collective shame. He's worse than the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week. He is our worst recurring nightmare.
Yes, a hound from hell, so to speak.
Yes.
So what do we got? Can we take it? Ben in Wisconsin, how are you? Our new affiliate in Madison, are you listening to that?
I am.
Hey, man.
Absolutely.
Good morning,
sir. How are you doing?
Great, man.
Good. I just had a little comment, something that scares the heck out of me, and you're a conspiracy guy, so I think you'll appreciate this. With Dick Cheney and Tom Ridge talking about terrorist acts, if we don't reelect George Bush or there'll be a terrorist attack, what
yeah.
do we do with the presidential
oh, yeah.
election?
Yeah.
Does that say to you they know something? Or,
yeah, or worse,
on something?
Or worse, or that they'll do something. You know, I mean, I don't put anything past this administration, certainly with my suspicions. I mean, it's hard to say for me, and obviously it's hard to say because it's impossible to get this sort of truth, Ben, is that, you know, are they just using it as a scare tactic? Are they being terrorists themselves by scaring us into thinking that we cannot have a leader other than the one they've chosen? It's hard for me to say, but, you know, as many people like myself, you know, I don't put anything past these guys. I don't know if they know something or they are willing to do something or they're willing to let something happen or they're just using the terror threats to scare the hell out of everybody that's willing to be scared enough to not make the right decision on election day.
Listen, this is a very simple equation. Scare tactics makes good politics.
Yeah.
And Cheney and these people know it, and that's what led him to run that ridiculous statement that anything other than a choice for Bush would invite a terrorist.
Well, let's not forget this.
The PDB was no indication of a terrorist threat.
Yeah, did he know something then? Are these people that, you know, bumbling? Are they that stupid? I doubt it. Giving Cheney's, you know, secrecy and, you know, and the fact that, you know, he's got this faux Christian AWOL blow monkey puppet working for him. Yeah, it's hard to know, but I would assume the worst about Dick Cheney.
Coming up in the next hour of Morning Edition, Recovery Corner, journalist and terror expert Peter Bergen, the liberal agenda, and much, much more, all for you here on Air America Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, Bill. This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt in my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you.
Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hearing a great deal about frequency modulation. The new high fidelity.
New way.
Superior sound resolution with S-Plex technology. Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. Tomorrow marks the third anniversary of the deadly terrorist attacks on U.S. soil in what is now internationally known as 9/11. Well, over 3,000 people lost their lives that day, as many still grapple with the specter of possible violence. For many in New York involved in the recovery effort at Ground Zero, a study reveals they continue to suffer. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta say the workers at the World Trade Center site are suffering from a number of ailments. Veteran New York Congressman Gerald Nadler told Air America this morning that the air in that part of the city remains unsafe.
They have refused to this day to do the kind of inspections and cleanup that the Inspector General's report says is mandatory. So I will guarantee you that there are thousands of people working in improperly cleaned up environments and therefore still contaminated environments, living in such environments and being slowly poisoned. And we are going to see the results of this 15 and 20 years from now, in many cases of lung cancer, asbestosis, silicosis, you name it. Now, this is in addition to the fact that an absolute majority of the first responders have come down with lung diseases already.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, as he appeared on Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America this morning. Former Vice President Al Gore has resurfaced in the middle of the hot political season with a scathing attack on a man who succeeded him at the White House, Dick Cheney. Gore called Cheney's comments about the possibility of more terrorism in the states if the current president is not reelected as an outrageous fear tactic and counterproductive. Gore says the Bush-Cheney team is employing this fear tactic because the economy, health care, and the war in Iraq are not working for them. John Kerry continues to hit the campaign trail hard with a stop yesterday in Iowa, where he told supporters he would cut the cost of health care. Kerry cited how the price of adequate care has soared in the last 4 years, with the Bush administration failing to do anything about it. Kennedy added that Bush has not even tried to assist those who have lost their health insurance. Kerry also pointed to a recent report showing a double-digit increase in the price of the health insurance. That same report also showed how employers have been cutting back on the health care for their employees. Kerry charged that 5 million people have lost their health care under George W. Bush. President Bush rides his campaign bus through West Virginia and Ohio today as the debate over his National Guard record intensifies. Democrats say memos reportedly from the files of a Texas Air National Guard officer make clear Bush shirked his Vietnam-era duty. The memos allege then-pilot Bush not only defied an order to take a physical, but his job performance was lacking. Press Secretary Scott McClellan dismisses the allegations as recycled by John Kerry backers desperate to boost the senator's flagging poll numbers. President's bus tour begins in Huntington, West Virginia, late today. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Hi, this is Steve Earle reminding that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jean Monheim. Register to vote.
And this particular election is going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please, be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
We'll set this shifty. Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Marks. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Should Pam and her husband enroll in his flexible spending account at work? My advice after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Pam wants to know if flexible spending accounts for medical expenses are a good idea.
I've got a question about some of my husband's health benefits. He has the opportunity to sign up for a flexible spending account. I don't know. Is that a good thing?
It can be an excellent thing. Typically, the flexible
personal spending accounts are used for one of two or three things. One is you can, for instance, set aside money for your medical, your out-of-pocket medical. Basically, anything he could have out-of-pocket, he can set that aside in the flexible spending account, pre-tax dollars. But you don't want to put too much in there, because if you don't use it, then it's lost. You should go spend it on some kind of a medical thing, like go buy an extra pair of glasses. Every $1,000 that you can run through that you legitimately really need to do anyway, saves you the taxes on $1,000, which is about $300. So
okay,
it's a pre-tax way to pay for your deductible or your out-of-pocket medical. And it's a smart thing to do in that sense.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Okay, go ahead.
I have something very
sound it out.
Important.
Good.
To talk to dads about reading with your children. Most kids want to read. If you spend even a little time with them every night, it will help a lot. It will help most. What's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
No, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, it builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dad.
Keep going.
Reading with
you. For more ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Why don't they talk about the issues?
That's right. Good morning, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, people with jobs, people without jobs, liberal fascists, liberal regulars, people who hate us. Good morning. Welcome aboard. Hello to our new people in Wisconsin.
And Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. Albuquerque, New Mexico, my hometown.
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Good morning, Florida. Sorry about all the weather.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah, because Ivan may be heading right to you, right behind, who was it, Francis?
Yeah, and Joey.
And who was right behind Charlie.
And there was Phil. Phil was a small hurricane that didn't really make the grade, and, you know, he's made fun of by the other hurricanes.
Call him the runt.
Hey, Kayla, let's hear that ad.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
John Kerry likes to call it the war on terror. That's because he lacks the moral clarity of George Bush, who knows what this is really about.
We've actually misnamed the war on terror. It ought to be the struggle against ideological extremists who do not believe in free societies, who happen to use terror as a weapon to try to shake the conscience of the free world.
John Kerry says he can even win this so-called war on terror. That's because he lacks the strong and steady leadership of George W. Bush, who's got a better plan than just winning.
I don't think you can win it, but I think you can create conditions so that those who use terror as a tool are less acceptable in parts of the world, let's put it that way.
George W. Bush, unlike John Kerry, he's fighting the struggle against ideological extremists who do not believe in free societies, who happen to use terror as a weapon to try to shake the conscience of the free world by creating conditions so that those who use terror as a tool are less acceptable in parts of the world.
That's right, our entitled, arrogant, smug, stubborn, faux Christian, AWOL, blow monkey puppet of the Cheney's regime's Republican death cult, hell-bent on destroying the planet, is not winning the war on terror because, you know, he says he is, and I got an email from a guy in Boston who claims to be a Democrat spouting on about how, you know, we don't realize that Bush is the only guy to have the resolve and the nads to fight this war, yet from today's news, Mark Riley, I'm not seeing any real successes. I'm seeing a president that all of a sudden Tom Ridge wants, he wants the plans for the Russian school attack. He wants to know how the terrorists got into the school and why their reaction was so screwed up, so he can study them. Study them? This is the third anniversary of 9/11. You haven't got a plan how to secure our kids in their schools? Study them. What are you guys doing over there? What are you just sitting around figuring out, you know, who's buying pencils? Who's in charge of computers? Why aren't we online? What is the Department of Homeland Security? A bunch of bumbling idiots over there trying to figure out how to spend the $10 they have in their powerless bureaucracy? This is all a bunch of lies, Riley. Al-Zahiri back on television with his own show, for God's sakes?
Yeah, and fashionably dressed and carrying a very nice machine gun with him at the same time.
That's how the terrorists are mocking the anniversary of one of the worst days in American history. Is the guy that this president said he was going to catch, that Cheney gets on television the other day and has the gall to insinuate that, you know, if we elect John Kerry, you know, that there's going to be more terrorist attacks. Dude, the guy you were supposed to catch 3 years ago is on television announcing the terrorist attacks. Isn't that part of a terrorist attack in and of itself? Where's Osama bin Laden? Enough already from these idiots. Do not be frightened by their bully juice, these arrogant death cult weirdos.
Let me tell you something about that appearance by Zawahiri.
I got all worked up. I'm exhausted.
What that does, Mark,
yeah,
is create more terrorists throughout the Arab world. This is on Al Jazeera. This is the most watched network in the Middle East.
Oh, dude.
And what his appearance says is, well, no, the United States hasn't won anything. Yeah, they may be occupying Iraq. Yeah, they may be chasing Osama in Afghanistan. But to the Arab world, they have won nothing. Why? Because this guy gets on television, is able to communicate directly with them and say, hey, you know what? America will be here forever, and they will lose, and they will lose a whole lot of American lives and spill a whole lot of American blood, and people start buying into that. And you know what's happening? People are traveling right into Iraq as we speak to join that fight.
I'll be honest with you. If something happens again in this country in the next couple of months, then, you know, if that is something, see, the way fear works is these guys are trying to pimp slap us into thinking that, you know, we're just their bitches, that, you know, we will do anything that they want us to do because we are so terrified of them that we have to honor whatever they say,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is just ridiculous. They're making, you know, it's like they're making the United States, the population of the United States, an abused spouse almost with this constant frightening thing. But if there's a terrorist attack in this country of any scale between now and the election, that should be a direct indication of nothing other than the failure of this administration to secure this country in a reasonable way. They shouldn't even be talking about this stuff. This should be taken care of, given, you know, all the lip service they've been paying for the last 2 years.
You know, Ridge has actually extended the whole be afraid, be very afraid time frame now, too. You know, it's not just till the election anymore. Now he's stretched it out to the inauguration in January.
Yeah, I mean, why not? What has he got to lose? He can just jack up the alert. And, you know, people in New York, you know, it's weird. I mean, with the fear that I have, you know, even tomorrow's the third anniversary of 9/11. There's not a day that doesn't go by where I don't think about it, where I don't experience a tangible sense of fear of something happening. Means that I don't feel safe in my country. It means that I don't feel safe because the administration that is claiming to take responsibility for fighting this war, for securing this country, has done nothing. We talked to Congressman Nadler earlier. The ports, 2% of the cargo containers are checked. 2%. And he's given a 30-year window, George Bush, a 30-year window to buy up all of this, you know, leftover Russian, you know, nuclear chemicals.
Materials, yeah.
Materials, whereas Kerry says he'll do it in 4. I don't even know what the particulars of that rule is, or that law, or whatever it is, that they have an agreement with Russia that we can buy all that stuff from them to secure the world. But so much is not being done.
Well, so remember now, Russia's got a free market economy. They need, you know, currency exchange in the country. And, you know, if they have something that other people want, it's been proven over time that the Russians will sell it to them. Whether it's nuclear materials, whether it's submarines. I'll never forget seeing a story about some drug dealer who approached a former Soviet Union Army official, or naval official, I think, who was looking to sell a submarine. He said, well, do you want it with or without missiles?
Yeah, and there's all these other, the former Soviet Republic, all the little countries that are, you know, have pulled away, and they have their own. There's no one managing that. But, you know, on a scarier fact is that, you know, Kerry brings it to everyone's attention that this administration has not done what was necessary to secure our own nuclear facilities right here in this country.
Absolutely.
We talked to Matthew Brzezinski 2 days ago, the author of Fortress America, who said that none of the money's been allocated properly, that you can you know, breeze right by almost any nuclear facility in this country.
Yep.
You know, and these guys are claiming to be doing something. They're running on the platform that this is their big success, and it's a horrendous lie. Today, you know, yesterday, the bombing of the Australian embassy
in Jakarta, Indonesia,
you know, is a blatant attack of terrorism. There's the Strategic Research Institute, you know, came out a while back saying that since 9/11, global terrorism incidences are up.
Yeah.
They're up.
Yeah. Was that the Institute for Strategic Studies?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, their report should have made us very afraid by itself. We're at a point in this country where I don't know how many people feel less vulnerable to attack than we were on September 12, 2001. I'm not sure that particularly most people here in New York City don't feel that same tangible sense of fear that you feel, Mark, in traveling around, looking back on that time and remembering the view from Park Avenue right here where our studios are located, and realizing that there were hundreds of thousands of people who did not know what they were going to do next, did not know whether they were safe, whether there would be some other form of attack, whether their lives, whether they even see their loved ones again.
Yeah, and I don't want to be, darkly, sort of entitled here in some level, but if you live in the Midwest, or you live in the South, or you live in a red state that you feel safe because of this administration, well, let me tell you something. We live here where it happened. You know, 3 years ago, we live here, you know, we saw it, we lived through it, we lived through the aftermath, we have dealt with the grief, we understand the toll that it takes, and, you know, you may have seen it on television, you may have, felt our pain, you may, you know, have sensed, that America was in trouble, but, you know, let me tell you something, to live here and to still experience the fear and to still experience a sense of insecurity because you don't feel taken care of by the administration that's running this country is a unique feeling to have in New York. And I'm willing to bet that if you feel safer because of this administration, it's because, you know, you're not that close to what we felt here.
Well, we saw this administration divert attention and resources away from the business at hand, which was capturing the people responsible for September 11th. They diverted those resources at one point to the tune of $700 million they took from Afghanistan to fight the war in Iraq.
That's another thing. If you lost loved ones in Iraq, you know, realize something that, you know, that the people that are responsible for 9/11 are at large. They've been at large for 3 years. One of them was just on TV 2 days ago. Saddam Hussein had, you know, from all indications, nothing to do with 9/11. There are 16,000 troops in Afghanistan right now. We have more cops here in New York City, and I don't feel as safe as I should, you know. But to just tell you about the priorities of this administration, just, you know, put that in a little bowl in your head and smoke it for a minute. That, you know, what's going on here is that the attention was focused on Iraq. There's been a propaganda campaign to connect Iraq with, you know, pre-9/11 terrorism. Doesn't exist. Now Iraq is, you know, terrorism central, all right? That's what's going on now because of this administration. So if you feel safer, you're delusional.
And you know what? If you think for a minute that Iraq and Afghanistan have been successful operations, which is what Bush and Cheney are running around the country telling people, think again.
And hopefully John Kerry, when he's president, will create an international alliance of people that work together and stay on top of this and put the money where it needs to be put in order to truly secure this nation. We're going to be back with Peter Bergen, who's going to be talking to us from Washington, D.C., the author of Terror Incorporated. He's got an Atlantic Monthly article coming out in October about Osama bin Laden. He's really the specialist, and it's always great to talk to him. It's 18 past the hour. We'll talk to him and you after this on Air America Radio.
Do you forget the names of the people you met last week, even the people you met last night? How would you like to be able to walk into a room, meet 50 people or more, and recall all their names instantly? I'm America's Memory Master, Matthew Girk, and I'll show you how to do it in the Memory Switch System, the fast, easy memory improvement technology for busy people who are embarrassed by their bad memory. In the Memory Switch, I'll show you how to recall names, dates, facts, figures, numbers, even business and technical data in a split second, and remember it for years. I'll show you how to lock information you see, hear, and read into your memory so you can recall it right when you need it for as long as you need it. Give me just one short hour, and I'll help you improve your memory so dramatically people will notice. Call now and try the Memory Switch risk-free for 30 days. 1-800-581-4641. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-581-4641. 1-800-581-4641.
Wouldn't it be great if you found a radio show that talked about which beer was more likely to give you a hangover? Or which new action movie was actually a chick flick in disguise? Wouldn't it be great to know that you're not the world's most gaseous man, despite what your ball and chain tells you? And ladies, wouldn't it be great to spend a little time listening in on what your guy likes to talk about when he's out with his buddies?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Mike Church, and welcome to my world.
Mike Church, weekdays 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Sirius Talk Central 148.
This is your Icicle Insight on the Environment.
Russell Tray, my guest, the book Politics, Pollution, and Pandas. 1970, you were the first chair of the Presidential Council on Environmental Quality. 1973, you headed the EPA. How has our perspective shifted regarding the environment?
Well, I think at the beginning, nobody knew what the environment was. When I told my parents that I was resigning as a tax court judge to become a full-time environmentalist, they thought two things. One, that I was crazy, and secondly, they didn't know what I meant. So that has all changed. We had a huge upsurge of public attention to the environment during my main career period, and now we see, I think, you know, that public excitement has died down. Most polls show that the American public really cares about the environment. However, the priority today is not what it was back in the 70s.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Big ears, flat feet, bushy hair. Of all the things to pass down to your child, difficulty reading shouldn't be one of them. That's why at Family Learning Programs, parents and kids learn together so they succeed together. The classes are amazing and free. Family Learning Programs. The best way out is by coming in. Call 1-877-FAMLET-1 and pass down the greatest thing of all, a chance.
Hey, what's going on? 21 past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio. You know, I think I might have gotten too somber before, but I just want to say that, you know, as frightened as I am, New York is beautiful. Everybody is you know, as much as we may have grieved and much as we were, you know, hit, you know, we are not, you know, in a victim state of mind here. Everything is pumping right along nicely. People, you know, I believe New York is one of the nicest places in the world.
It's the greatest city in the world.
It absolutely, like, I've lived in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Boston. I've never felt safer than in New York. Now, that's not talking about, you know, insecurity about terrorism or me, you know, determining whether or not, you know, I feel safer on a terrorist level because of this administration. But just as far as people go, New Yorkers help each other out. New Yorkers say, you know, when I had a guy visit here from the South once, you know, he was like, God, you know, isn't everybody angry in New York? I'm like, no, buddy. You know, everybody's dealing. You know, we all live in, there's millions of people here. We're right up next to each other. You got to build a little shield in order to find your little place to live. But we're very polite in our resistance. You know
yes.
what I mean? All right, I got to hold the presidential palm pilot off until the next segment. I want to introduce our guest. He's talking to us from Washington, D.C. He's busy because he's a specialist in Al-Qaeda, and there's Al-Qaeda news out there. So let's welcome Peter Bergen to the show. Good morning, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to talk to you again. What's the significance of the Al-Zawahiri videotape?
Well, we were expecting this tape. Every anniversary of 9/11, Al-Qaeda has come out with a some kind of major statement sort of around, really within a 24 hours of the 9/11 anniversary. So this was not a surprise. There's nothing in it that's, I think, particularly new or interesting, except that it's a videotape, which is sort of unusual. We've had about 20 audio tapes from either Ayman al-Zawahiri or Bin Laden since 9/11.
But he looks like he has, it seems like they're using a better beta cam. You see, it looks like he might have a little makeup on. The production values are good.
The production values are not bad.
So isn't that a message saying that, you know, we're alive and well, everything's good? That's
absolutely.
Sort of...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's, it shows a certain comfort level to be, you know, making a reasonably well-produced videotape.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying good in a bad way, that, you know,
yeah.
they are intact. And you were recently in Afghanistan, so would you agree with the al-Zawahiri's assessment of the situation there, that that it's only a matter of time before America fails?
It's ludicrous.
Okay.
I mean, he's right about Iraq. Obviously, Iraq is a disaster. But to say that, that al-Qaeda, the Taliban are sort of controlling half the country, as you said in the videotape, is really kind of moronic, really.
Do they control any of the country, Peter?
Not really. I mean, I was there for work. My girlfriend came with me for vacation. So, you know, I wouldn't subject my girlfriend to a vacation in the country where it was that dangerous. And I have a friend who'd been in Iraq for the last year and who had just gone to Afghanistan. I told them, the contrast is very strong. And I got an email from my friend back saying, being in Afghanistan is like going to Florida compared to being in Iraq. It's a whole different deal. The security situation is very different.
It's interesting that, you know, I guess reporters have a different sort of barometer for what a vacation is. you know what I mean? It's like, so you're going to go to Syria for the next vacation.
Maybe.
Peter, how important is it now on the third anniversary of the September 11th terror attacks to actually capture Osama bin Laden? Capture him or kill him?
Well, you know, he's somewhat been forgotten, right? And of course, it's incredibly important, not only justice for the victims of 9/11, but the hundreds of other people that have been killed around the world by al-Qaeda. And also, you know, there's sort of a conventional wisdom that it doesn't really matter that al-Qaeda will go on, which is partly true. But in fact, you know, as we see from these videotapes and audio tapes from Ayman al-Zawahiri and bin Laden, they keep producing statements that actually influence the debate within al-Qaeda. I mean, Ayman al-Zawahiri called for attacks on the president of Pakistan, General Musharraf, and very shortly thereafter there were very serious assassination attempts against him. Bin Laden called for attacks against the members of the coalition in Iraq, and there were bombs in Madrid, there were attacks on British banks and the British consulate in Turkey. So getting bin Laden is, I think, very important.
Are they still communicating with symbols? You speculate in your book, which I read, which is very very engaging, great book, Terror Incorporated. Are they using symbols, signs? Did you see any on the videotape?
No. Look, I mean, that whole thing about they were, you know, sending out secret messages on these videotapes, which you may remember after 9/11, was sort of the idea. I mean, there were no coded messages. They kept saying very specifically, kill Americans.
It wasn't too hard to read that code. Don't mean to laugh for the dark humor there. But now, who is Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri? Who are they campaigning for, Bush or Kerry?
I mean, I don't think they really care. I mean, as a practical matter, Kerry's foreign policy and Bush's foreign policy wouldn't be that dissimilar. Of course, there would be a difference in tone, but, you know, Kerry has said that the troops are going to remain in Iraq until 2000.
But he's more of an internationalist than George W. Bush.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's, from that perspective, it doesn't. I mean, there has been discussion on an al-Qaeda website that it would be better to have Bush in office because he's good for business.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry, Mark, go ahead.
No, I think a lot of this can be distilled down to one very simple question, Peter, and that is, do you think Americans feel safer or should feel safer 3 years past September 11th?
I mean, I think we are safer. I mean, we're certainly not, I mean, to somebody pointed out, we've got much better security. Does that make us safer? They're two different questions. But I think that we are. I mean, it's not, on the other hand, al-Qaeda hasn't sort of stopped wanting to attack us. And you know, the people who run al-Qaeda don't take vacations or weekends, and they're not going to sort of suddenly just give up their desire to attack the United States because of an election result in November or for any other reason. They're going to, you know, 10 years from now, they'll still want to do this. So we remain the number one target. We're much harder as a target than we were 3 years ago.
What about the rest of the world, Peter, quickly?
I think Europe is the, you know, as we saw in Madrid, I would say that, you know, if I was to pick a place where they might attack again successfully, it might be London.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but thank you, Peter, for joining us for the information. I know you got a busy day. Take care. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, that was Peter Bergen. The book is Holy War Incorporated. Sorry. Riley?
All right. Coming up, Recovery Corner, the liberal agenda, and you on the telephones with your reflections on September 11th at 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270 here on Air America Radio.
hi. I'm Larry Maestrich. I'm a filmmaker and a citizen, not a politician. I believe passionately in the freedom of expression, an idea that is increasingly threatened by today's administration. Films play an important role in bringing social issues to the public. Yet fewer films receive distribution today, especially those expressing an alternative point of view. Seven conglomerates now control which films you get to see. Film Movement and Air America Radio are trying to change all that. Subscribe to Film Movement at airamericaradio.com and receive a new, first-run film to own on DVD each month. Award-winning films with strong social messages. Important films such as Falling Angels with Miranda Richardson about the American family in the 1960s, and The Party's Over about the state of democracy in America. These films are exclusively available through Film Movement. We thank you for your support in our mission to bring alternative voices in film to America. Please visit airamericaradio.com and help make a difference.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman, the chief deputy in Bin Laden's terrorist organization, told Al Jazeera Television that the defeat of America in Iraq and Afghanistan is just a matter of time. Ayman al-Zawahiri made the declaration yesterday in an apparent bid to get the ears of other elements of al-Qaeda to step up the attacks. Declaration comes as this nation observes the third anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has been accused of trying to bring the country to the brink of civil war. With plans to evacuate Jewish settlements. Leaders in that region are making the charge. The warning is the latest in increasingly hostile rhetoric against Sharon's plan to withdraw from the Gaza Strip and four isolated West Bank settlements in 2005. And for the second morning in a row, John Kerry is talking about health care with voters in the Midwest. It's an indication he believes the rising medical and prescription drug costs can win over undecided voters as much as jobs and the economy. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Hi, this is Steve Irwin reminding you that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jean Monheim. Register to vote.
In this particular election, it's going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
What's up, this Shifty? Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Mark. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. An emailer wants to consolidate their bills with Ameridebt. My advice after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Bill emails wanting to know if consolidating with Ameridebt is a good plan. What do you think of Ameridebt? I've gotten behind on my bills. Should I use them? No, because they have a horrible reputation. The attorneys general in many states are attacking them, trying to shut them down, drive them out of states. Really bad Better Business Bureau reports. Bottom line is they mistreat customers. The big reason I don't recommend Ameridebt or any of these other things where they take your bills and pay them for you instead of you doing your own thing, well, that's because it destroys your credit. You go to get a mortgage after using one of these bill-paying programs like Ameridebt, you will be treated as if you have filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. That is according to Fannie Mae, FHA, and VA guidelines. I didn't make that up. So don't go into one of those programs if you don't want to make a mess of your credit. You work your way through it. You just need a plan. You need to write it down. Take care of necessities first. Food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and utilities before you do anything else.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Yes, we're back, 33 past the hour. That's Mark Riley there.
Good morning.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. How about a little of this?
Why don't they talk about the issues?
What are you pointing out, Larson? Smarty Pants Larson making... Do you want to do calls now? Okay. All right, after this. Sure, I didn't do the Palm Pilot. I know some people build their mornings around it. I'd like to think that. Came in earlier. Here's the president's schedule for today. 8 o'clock a.m., wake up, stay on message. The old message. Job losses are Clinton's fault. Why do you think he had to have heart surgery? 9:30 a.m. Prepare for bus tour of West Virginia and Ohio. Note, I'm on a bus going to West Virginia. If I'd known it would lead to this, I would have never invaded Iraq. 10:45 a.m. Rally in Huntington, West Virginia. Tell them how much you've always admired miners, hardworking blue-collar heroes like Bashful, Doc, Sneezy, Dopey, Sleepy, Happy, and of course Grumpy. 1:30 p.m. Ask President Bush event in Portsmouth, Ohio. Have Rove plant someone in the audience to ask, would you mind if we change the Constitution so you can be president forever? 4:30 p.m. Rally in Chillicothe, Ohio. Note, I've been in Ohio so much we're beyond words at this stage. Just smile, wave, and say, whatever I said last week goes double. 6 p.m. Call Cheney in Wisconsin. Tell him to back off on saying, if you elect Kerry, you'll be attacked by terrorists. Soften it to, if you elect Kerry, you'll get herpes. 8 p.m., listen to weather. Another hurricane in Florida. It's all working out just as we planned. 8:15 p.m., call Nader. Tell him we may not even need him in Florida. Thank you, Ivan. 11 p.m., bedtime, take long shower. Must remove stink of regular people. 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. Here, Republican National Convention. Republicans, thanks for nothing. Gross is during the GOP festivities at Madison Square Garden. This is on Broadway for shows. We're off 20% from the same week a year ago when there was no convention. You guys actually ruined business.
Wow. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah, and attendance slumped 18%. We put on good shows here. Manhattan, Broadway's got the good shows, song and dance people. You know what? We weren't that happy you were here anyways. But it would have been nice if you would have went to a show, because despite what a lot of actors may have thought of you, they were willing to perform because the show must go on. And you frightened little weirdos, you hate mongering.
They read those stories about
angry
protesters.
We will not go to any shows on Broadway because liberals like Kennedy, John Kerry go to Broadway shows. That's my Zell Miller impression. I don't know if it's right.
You're good.
Hey, we're talking, let me shift from funny into the serious again. 9-11, the third anniversary of the horrendous fact is tomorrow. And we were talking about our personal stories. It was my wife now, she was my girlfriend at the time, you know, literally was so debilitated, mentally debilitated, because she worked down there. And as I said earlier, she was able to get through on the cell. I can't remember who called who. But you couldn't get on cell phones. And she had gotten off the train for work, which was 2 blocks from the Trade Center. And, you know, it was, I guess, right after the first tower fell, and there was stuff flying all over the place. And after that, you know, after she walked back uptown, I mean, within 2 or 3 days, she was literally in such a state of shock that she had to fly home. She got, you know,
really?
they closed down the airports. It must have been 2 days after, because they weren't letting a lot of flights out. And she got an early flight out of Newark. And as I recall, am I right in thinking that some days things were flying, other days things weren't? I mean, wasn't it kind of touch and go for
it? It was done in stages, unless your name was Bin Laden, in which case you got out the next day.
Sorry. I laugh at weird moments, but that was funny.
But, I mean, you're right. It was a staged, staggered kind of reopening of airports. Some airports, particularly here, I'm not sure that all the airports in the New York area opened again at the same time. In other words, Newark, LaGuardia, and Kennedy. But there was a great deal of that same kind of, I got to get out of here feeling on a lot of people's parts. I remember it taking like 2.5-3 hours to get home that night. You know, we had been here working on, you know, covering what was going on until about maybe, I don't know, 6-7 o'clock, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And there was still some question about what was open and what wasn't. And I walked out of here and started walking toward Port Authority, which is my way of getting home.
Mm-hmm.
Got over to Port Authority and found out that the bus terminal was still closed, even though they had said on the news it was open, that they had reopened it. There was apparently another scare, so they closed it back down.
Right.
They told us the only way we think you might be able to get home is to walk over to the pass station, which was another 8 blocks back in the direction that I had just come from.
Yeah.
So I walked back over to the PATH train station and saw a line outside the station, actually, around the block, waiting to get into the PATH station.
Yeah.
Just as I got there, they opened the station and started letting people on trains. which, of course, was a nightmarish trip under the Hudson River. People figuring, my God, what happens if a bomb goes off on the train?
Everything you did within a few weeks after 9/11 felt like you were literally taking your life into your own hands.
Own hands, yeah.
If you got on a subway, if you got on a bus.
Everybody was literally, I mean, people were looking at each other, people were looking at
their
folks.
That was the thing, it's like no one, I had never felt more alive in my life than the few weeks after that. When we were doing comedy, people were in a state of shock for at least 2 months, literally in an active state of shock in the city. Everything was like, you know, right here in front, you know, everyone was like, you know, hey, what's going on? You okay? I'm okay. I'm dealing. Are you all right? I don't know. You know, and that was basically what people were saying when they're like, I'm good. No, yeah. I'm not. Help. You know, but it was, doing comedy was mind blowing. We want to hear from you guys, you know, about any experiences you want to share or any reflections, we're capable of hearing whatever it is you want to share. So 866-303-2270 is our number. It's 39 past the hour. We'll talk to you in a second here on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Steve Earle reminding me that your vote does make a difference.
And it's going to affect you for the next 4 years. I'm Jean Monahan. Register to vote.
In this particular election, it's going to affect the lives of your children and their children for years and years to come.
Please, be vocal. Speak out. Say something. Do something. Register to vote.
What's up, this shifty? Make your vote count.
If you don't vote, someone else is going to decide your future.
The future's in your hands.
Apathy isn't sexy. This is Jennifer Mark. Register to vote.
Get serious about voting.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
Ambassador Joseph Wilson, you got a front row seat into what it's like to be a subject of media coverage. How did you rate the media coverage of your op-ed piece and the aftermath? What did they get right? What did they get wrong?
Well, you know, I've been watching the media coverage really in the run-up to the debate on going to war. My own sense in the run-up to the war was that all of us let the side down. I think that we had an obligation, our Congress, our investigative journalists, those of us who attempted to speak out, really had an obligation to discuss fully this decision on whether or not we were going to send 130,000 people to invade, conquer, now occupy Iraq before we got these guys there. And I regret very much that there were so few of us who were willing to stand up and be counted in that particular debate.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals. Just like I found the need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
This therapy session is almost over, Bob. Now, the problem?
I was in a car accident. I want my car fixed right, but where? Please, help me!
You're scaring me, Bob.
Wait, I've got it. iCar Gold Class Professionals Businesses!
Great. They know how to fix your vehicle right. They have up-to-date training and keep up with the latest repair methods and technology. Visit the Gold Class Business Directory at www.i-car.com.
iCar, a not-for-profit organization, and the Gold Class Professionals Program are dedicated to training the collision industry to ensure complete and safe repairs.
Past the hour.
Fire truck!
It's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio. It's, I'm Mark and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark!
And in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. As always, I'm offering my counsel to my temporary and difficult sponsee, George W. Bush. I'm sorry, George W. Wow, I just broke your anonymity. I've been watching you on the campaign trail, shaking hands, making speeches, visiting 3, sometimes 4 swing states a day. Must be exhausting. Most people couldn't do it unless you're on something. And I think you are, buddy. Don't fall into that con that prescription medication isn't addictive or it isn't acting out, my friend, or using. I think you may be pulling an Elvis here, and somewhere there's a Dr. Nick that's hooking you up. What's making you so chipper, George W.? B12 injections? Huh? Dexedrine? Yeah. Triple espresso shots in your mochaccino? That's not a concern, but Dexedrine, huh? It isn't the poll numbers. I know. I can tell you that. Since you've always surrounded yourself with sycophants who'll do whatever you want, you're on dangerous ground here. Someday soon, you may wake up totally exhausted and not want to face those damn Ohio voters one more time. So you turn to one of your staffers and say, you know, get me a little, you know what I'm saying, a little of that. Then how about a little, how about some of that? And then maybe one of these. How about a little of that? And maybe some of the, woohoo! The good folks in Toledo deserve better, don't you think, pal? So remember, keep the plug in the jug. There's no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. Bend your knees before you bend your elbow. Sorrow is looking back. Worry is looking forward. You received without cost, now give without charge. If we don't grow, we gotta go. It's alcoholism, not alcoholism. Get to a meeting, all right? Do you hear me? Oh, my God. Think. That's right. Who do we got on the phone there, Riley?
We have got Eulalio from the Bronx. Good morning.
How you doing?
Hey, how you been doing?
Good, all right, man.
You know, I was just thinking, on my way to work on September 11th, I remember thinking, I was working in East Harlem, and I remember thinking about how grateful I was for my life at that point.
Yeah.
And when I got out of the train, I looked down Lexington Avenue and saw this plume of smoke. You know, all the way down to the distance. When I got to work, of course, you know, I found out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually saw in real time the second plane hit. But I remember thinking something that happened right before 9/11. I believe it was in June. There was an international conference on hatred in Africa.
Oh, the racism conference, the Durban conference.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And when the issue of the Palestinians came up, the United States and Israel walked out. And
right.
I remember thinking at that time, I said, you know what, this is the kind of stuff that gets everybody riled up against the United States.
Right.
You know, and so I remember thinking about that. And I remember when I saw that, when I found out what was going on in this country, I realized, you know, I said, you know what, I immediately, it was like almost like a knee-jerk reaction. I said, I blame the government. I blame our foreign policy for this.
Yeah, I did too,
and
actually. That was my first response.
As feeling safer, I don't feel safer now. For the simple fact of the current administration, our current foreign policy, and the current state of this country where, oh, like half of the people really believe the stuff that they hear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's scary.
Yeah, it definitely. It really is. Thanks for your call, buddy. He's right. You know, and I had the same reaction when I was doing comedy those first few weeks after 9/11. I was just livid. I was livid. And then, you know, then all of a sudden that's sort of like, well, if you blame us first, I mean, obviously I blame, you know, the terrorists for doing the act.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly my reaction was, I don't trust this administration. I don't trust, you know, that they're telling us the truth. I certainly know that on some level our foreign policy has made us a lot of enemies out there and unnecessarily so, clearly.
Unnecessarily. That's the important.
Yeah. Peter in Manhattan, how are you?
Hey, Peter.
I'm doing all right.
Good.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm just calling to reflect. You know, you were asking for questions on 9/11.
Sure, sure.
I worked downtown that period of time, but I just moved and fortunately had the day off of work. You know, I went to vote. It was election day. And, you know, I came back home and I put on the TV. And I swear I was watching the morning movie, you know.
Yeah, oh, I know. It was horrifying.
It was beyond belief.
It was like, this can't be real, right?
It was just totally out of a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no other way to describe it.
Only it was real.
It was very real.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was working for the city at the time, and I got a call a few days later. I was working for one of the offices, and I got a call from my commissioner that I needed to come to the command center. And I don't know if you know about the command center, which Giuliani had built in Seven World Trade.
Yeah.
Which
he barely, I mean, several people lost their lives in Seven World Trade.
Yeah, exactly. But there was this really, you know, advanced citywide command center there.
The bunker. They called it the bunker.
The bunker. It was amazing. But anyway, it was destroyed and they moved the command center. So I was called into the command center.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to go down to the site about the 14th or the 15th. And,
Yeah.
You smelled that smell, didn't you?
That smell, I'll never, ever forget that smell.
Yeah, no, and none of us will. You know, thanks for sharing your feelings, and thanks for your call there, Peter.
Yeah.
You take care. Yeah, I mean...
People
are
getting emotional about this now.
Yeah, I mean, like, this morning, and, like, if I teeter, like, I sometimes I laugh uncomfortably when you talk about this stuff, because, like, that was sort of like... You know, when I was doing comedy, you know, after that, you know, I really, there was a purpose in order to somehow relieve some of the tension and fear and shock that people were feeling. And as I said earlier, people would laugh in the weirdest way. They would laugh at everything, but it'd be like, ah!
Yeah.
Ah! You know, like, it was like a shock response. Like, you know, it was not... And I really felt a mission to, you know, not only explore my own feelings about it, but also to provide that relief. And then there was all that talk about, like, will there ever be anything funny again? And I immediately thought, it's here now. It has to be here now somewhere. You know, gallows humor and also humor in the face of tremendous tragedy is what gets, I always thought is what, it always got me through my darkest times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there was another tragedy that went on in the wake of September 11th, and that was... a wave of Americanism that turned into anti-Arab, anti-Asian in many cases. I mean, there was a Sikh who was beaten. There were other people who were not Arabs. Who were attacked in the immediate aftermath of September 11th. A lot of people forget that.
It was horrible. And I was doing bits around that stuff to try and disarm some of that stuff. But people, you know, were angry and they were taking their anger out on anybody. And, you know, it was horrible. I live out in Queens and the tension was just, you know, it was so palpable because of the large Arab population. So I guess we'll take are we going to take some on the other side of this break? One or two calls? So stay on the phone, and we'll be back in a second. It's 50 past the hour. It's Air America Radio.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Are Americans better off than we were 4 years ago? In a new national poll conducted by Mother Jones Magazine, a strong majority of registered voters from across the country claim that the United States has gotten pretty seriously off on the wrong track. And half of those surveyed voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 presidential election. Take the poll yourself and view the complete results at motherjones.com. Also at motherjones.com, your daily mojo. Every day the editors of Mother Jones scour the web for the day's most important stories and post them for you online. Mother Jones, strange name for a magazine, but take a look, see what you think.
The Smith family doesn't have serious first traffic and weather. The Jones family checks first traffic and weather before every trip. The Smith family doesn't have constantly updated traffic and weather conditions.
Bringing the convertible, Bob. Great idea.
The Jones family got to where they were going fast and are now having a great time. The Smiths are still stuck. Keep up with the Joneses and get where you're going this holiday weekend. First traffic and weather. Series 150 to 159.
Wash off the blackboard. Put away the books. Take down the posters.
Put away the gym balls.
Empty out our desks.
Scrape our names off the lockers.
Pull our drawings off the walls.
Put it all in the garbage.
Throw it away.
Throw it all away.
AIDS has killed more children worldwide than there are in all the grade schools in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami combined. The time to do something is now. The place is apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
A public service announcement brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Studies show that over time, anabolic steroids can indeed take a heavy toll on a person's health. Abuse of oral or injectable steroids is associated with increased risk for severe liver problems, including hepatic cancer. People who share needles or use non-sterile injection techniques can also put themselves at risk for contracting dangerous infections. For more information about the harmful effects of anabolic steroids, please go to drugabuse.gov.
All right, we're going to try and put this thing down. It's Mark Maron here. It's Mark Riley there.
Hi. Right.
It's a morning's edition on Air America Radio. We're reflecting painfully and, you know, with a certain amount of, you know, consideration on, you know, on 9/11, which the anniversary is tomorrow. We've got Bob in New Jersey. Bob.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Good. Good. What's going on?
Well, I grew up on Roosevelt Island and, you know, which is just off of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went to school in Manhattan, you know, big up to Stuyvesant High School there, people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I got affected by 9/11 in terms of loss of life. And what that, you know, what that did to me was it just kind of made me feel guilty.
You didn't get affected in terms of loss of life.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, for weeks I checked everybody I could think of, you know, like alumni stuff. And,
yeah, sure.
You know, and I, you know, I just couldn't come up with anybody. And I was like, you know, I feel bad that so many other people got affected. And, you know, and the people that were just here for a minute, you know, like they moved, like the people at Cantor Fitzgerald and that just, you know, moved here to work here, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
And you know, it just, it, you know, the first attack on the Trade Center, my brother walked down, you know, 300 flights or whatever it is that, you know, from the top building because he was working for the Port Authority.
Uh-huh.
You're talking about in 93?
Yeah, 93.
Yeah.
And my ex-girlfriend's office blew up, and they were lucky because, you know, because they were in the basement above the where the car had been parked. And they closed their offices to have them painted.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's been close calls in that, but, you know, when there's so much devastation and you know, we just, I don't know, I just felt like,
yeah, I know.
I felt worse than if I, you know, been able to, you know, pin my grief on somebody that was lost.
Yeah, yeah, it was a broader grief, but you know, certainly your heart's in the right place, and thanks for calling, because I think a lot of people felt that too. That
absolutely.
That you know, they knew people who had people in there, and you know, everybody felt bad in their own different ways. But that's an interesting thing, that type of guilt, because
yeah.
You know, you feel connected as a person, but you know, you felt so bad for other people that you almost felt like you almost, you know.
You almost felt guilty not knowing anybody, not being connected enough to know anybody that was affected by this. But the other side of it is, for me, it took a while for me to find out that I knew people.
Yeah, I didn't have anyone directly in it. But Jonathan Larson is in the studio, our producer, and you know, he has a recollection about you know, when he finally had his emotions connect. What was that about?
Well, I didn't know anybody either.
Yeah.
But I knew. I had interviewed three of the firefighters, so that was a weird experience, hearing their names on the TV and saying, oh, my God, I knew that guy. But I was working at CNN at the time, and you know, we were working straight long hours, and the first time I was able to get out and go down, I went to Union Square where all the faces were posted, and some guy had, one of the guys up on the wall had,
yeah,
like, a funny name,
yeah,
you know, and I said in this sort of ironic postmodern way to my girlfriend, you know, or so-and-so,
yeah,
you know, in this sort of, like, cutesy thing. And I said it again, and then I kept saying it until it was devastatingly real, and I collapsed in her arms just,
yeah,
crying for this one guy to make it real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's weird that you can only hold it up, the front, so long.
Yeah.
You can only defend yourself from the reality of it for so long.
The release felt great in a way. I so needed that.
That was powerful down there.
It's good to laugh.
Yeah, yeah, and that was powerful, you know, down there at Union Square. That was really something. Well, there you go. That was a good segue there. Here's the liberal agenda for today, a fairly an emotionally charged day. Thanks
for
sharing.
I was trying to lead that up.
Yeah,
it's good to laugh.
It's good to laugh. Bing! One, New York has the highest taxes in the country. Raise taxes in your state to their level in solidarity. Two, studies say fewer kids are using LSD. Sit a child down and tell them someday you're going to turn 20 and realize you never tripped. Three, call Carrie campaign. Make sure their health care plan includes fully funded spa days. 4, Vegas' oldest showgirl is being forced to retire. Protest ageism until she's back in the show, then protest sexism in the show. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Okay, the hurricanes have caused terrible destruction, but let's take a minute to think about how the hurricane feels.
Okay.
What do we got tomorrow there, Riley?
Well, tomorrow's Saturday, so we got home.
Oh.
But wanted to say
wow,
a shout out to Kenny.
I'm coming in.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Kenny, the Soho firefighter, we want to say a shout out to him. Coming up on Monday's morning's edition, President Bush says he wants to extend the assault weapons ban, so why is it expiring on Monday? We'll get into that and a whole lot more on Monday's morning's edition here on Air America Radio. Good weekend, gentlemen.
You too, man.